Now, before we get started with our second band, let's tell those of you who would like to be on our show how you can be here with us on the gig. Send us your demo tape, along with your bio, and please don't forget your phone number so we can call you as soon as possible. Our address is Solo Productions, P.O. Box 2791, San Pedro, California, 90731. Now, here's our second band for this evening, No Doubt and Up Yours.
I thought this was charming as hell.
She's charming.
It was just the demo tape, the like cheesy ass like graphic in the background.
Yeah,
it's a time it was long gone. Not a phone in sight.
Do you ever play a local cable access show before?
I have not, actually.
I don't think I have.
Have
either.
You?
I've played local like tiny college esque radio shows. I did that with a band.
I've actually never played a radio show. Yeah.
And then we got interviewed on the show.
Nice.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It felt like a real band for like 30 seconds on
I bet
the like MIT show, like the MBR show.
Pipeline.
Yeah.
I'm assuming No Doubt was at the phase where if they had gotten interviewed, they would have been like, whoa, shit, this is cool.
Yeah. Well, like, they act like it in that clip, sort of.
Yeah.
Where they like cannot deal with being on television, even if it's to 1,000 people in San Pedro, California.
1,000 is like...
Oh, yeah, generous. the interviewer is very... Very cable access.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, I also don't think I would, for some reason, I will never hear San Pedro and not think of the Minutemen. I don't know, you're not a big Minutemen fan, but
no.
Like, they're so in my mind engraved with San Pedro that this every time I hear that town, I'm like, oh, Minutemen. Mm. But I don't think she...
She might have been in the Minutemen. That young... she being...
Who knows the age of these people?
I was about to say, like, well, No Doubt's like 21... Right,
I think Gwen is probably even younger.
I think she's like 21. They act. It looks like they're kind of a high school band, even though I think they are like college aged. And I think
the line there is, you know,
yeah. But we'll get to it.
Yeah,
because we're going to talk about that clip.
Yeah, good point.
But I did want to intro it because it was fun. It was a fun little intro moment. Our first cable access show, I think, and to start with cable access and end with what we're ending today was funny. When we were debating how to do the clips, so you were like, we have to keep the cable access show.
Yeah, because it's the only thing that like documents that they were even a band before.
Right. And 95. then I realized what the clip we were going to end with, and I was like, oh, that is a crazy little journey.
It really is.
We're going to go on our podcast.
Straight to the moon, baby.
So speaking of our podcast, I'm going to tell people what it is.
Lay it on them.
This is tonight's musical guest today, the podcast where we discuss the cultural memory and career arc of bands and artists through their late night TV show performances. Some good, some bad. Always late. Fucking always late. I'm John Hillman, and with me is my good friend, Alex Beaton.
Hi, John.
Hello, Alex. We're in a new studio today.
We are in a new studio.
We've upgraded, baby.
Quote, unquote, studio.
We've hit the big time.
Yep.
In a new studio spot.
Here we are in that little side room off of my bedroom.
When you got the new room,
yeah.
And I saw this little side room.
It's nice.
It was exciting.
Yeah.
It is a nice little hangout. We've hung out in it before. We listened to music in here before.
Yeah.
It's a fun little spot.
And now it's like my office for my burgeoning podcast career.
Perfect.
Burgeoning.
Yeah, quite. I mean, burgeoning is a stretch. You're stretching the definition of burgeoning. But yeah, because, you know, we had to move around the schedule, and I'm going to be away, and my wife has a real job in which she's actually servicing the public in a way where I can't bother her on a work night with us talking some random fucking bullshit about No Doubt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she was like, get the hell out of the house, John.
Reasonable,
frankly. I don't want you here.
Frankly, reasonable.
Most of the time. Especially don't want you here when Alex is around. You know what I realized, though, sadly?
What's that?
Is our first episode without producer Hank.
Oh, shit.
And so this is going to be a mess.
That's a good point.
This episode's going to be a mess. It's going to be all over the place. It's going to have no structure.
Ugh.
The clips are all going to be out of order. We could just do a bit. We should have done a bit.
You know, like, I wasn't worried, and now, like, I hadn't even noticed he wasn't here. Now it's like the only thing I can think about.
We could have done one of those like mini bits where like the episode is really bad on purpose. Because Hank isn't here,
and then Hank comes back,
and then Hank shows up, and he's like, "I'm whipping you guys into shape."
Oh boy,
you're out of control.
Nice
talking about this little band from Orange County, California.
Hmm.
All right, well, I'm feeling the energy of the new studio.
Yeah.
I'm feeling the energy of the band we're talking about today.
I want to talk about No Doubt.
And so, yeah, I mean, you know, we're back, like I said last ep, we're back on our bullshit.
Yes.
We're back into the mid-90s, where we belong. You know, everyone last up, you know, we talked about this incredible woman and incredible career. And everyone was like, no, we don't care about that. We don't care about one of the greatest singers of all time. We want you to keep talking about the 90s. Man, we love the 90s. Remember that show? We want that.
I will.
This is my impression of our annoying small fan base. Eh.
You know, you must be getting all these emails.
Just troves.
Just so many.
Not even emails. I'm getting personalized letters. Doxed me. They're sending me personalized letters, and they're doing it in the... They're going, man, the 90s.
This isn't pop punk enough. I'm sending a SWAT team to your house.
I want the upstrokes. I want horns.
There you are playing, you know, Call of Duty on your Twitch stream or whatever the fuck it is you do.
Wait. To be clear, I do not do that.
Well,
I do not have a Twitch stream. I mean, if I had a Twitch stream, I'd be promoting it on this podcast.
You got doxxed so many times because of your
all my other ventures,
internet behaviors, yeah.
And now, so we're giving back to the fans, all the whiny ass fans who want. We're back in the 90s, okay? We left for one episode,
guys. Let's make it clear. Please, nobody dox John anymore. Just don't, okay? He gets it. We're listening.
We get it. You listen to the show and you love the 90s.
We get it.
Fine. So now we're back. We're back, especially in the mid-90s. And a band that I feel like, well, it's going to be big for both of us in different ways.
Yeah.
I think for you, my guess, if we were to move into the personal upfront history of the band portion of our podcast,
yep.
You know when we do this thing?
I do.
We're talking about, how do you experience the band? We're going to do that now.
Yeah, okay.
And so I feel like for you, probably... No Doubt was like the one that kicked off a bunch of like third wave ska bands. Like,
yeah.
Probably the reason you found out about those bands.
That's a good question. Yeah.
I mean, like bands like even like Less Than Jake or.
I'm trying to think about this because No Doubt was my first concert ever.
Really?
Yeah. I went to the Tragic Kingdom tour.
That wasn't the one with Pinkerton, was it? That wasn't.
No.
They opened for Weezer?
No, I think the Vandals opened. Josh Freese, who's now in Foo Fighters.
Another Josh Freese reference on our show.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's all over the fucking place.
Where was the show?
It was at the Worcester Centrum, which is not the Centrum anymore. It's now...
The Palladium?
No, it's the bigger place.
It's not called the Centrum anymore?
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
DCU Center?
Yeah. They think they play some hockey.
It was awesome. But like fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, first big show I ever went to, my twin sister and I went. We were both into Tragic Kingdom at the time. Must have been 96. I think we were in sixth grade.
Some cool twin 11-year-olds at the No Doubt show.
Went with my dad, sat in the way high up seats, and it was awesome. And it was a huge show, of course, you know.
Do you remember when in 96?
No. Let me look it up so that I can have some reference. But yeah, they were just like, they played basically all of Tragic Kingdom, right? Because what the fuck else are they going to play at that point?
Yeah, they might have could have played a couple songs off of Beacon Street. But yeah.
What I do know for sure is they played a cover of Obladi Oblada and a cover of Pawn Shop by Sublime. Because
the latter making a little more sense than the former.
Because they were,
of course,
Bradley. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is after he passed away, so it was like a tribute to him.
Well, that time stamps it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, he died in like February of 96, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I didn't realize they were your first concert.
Yeah. But I think at the same time is when I was getting really into like Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake. So I don't know if... Because No Doubt by then wasn't even associated with that scene already. They were already kind
no,
of...
No, but I think a lot of people credit them
but it's why I like... I mean, it's
you know,
why I liked
why
it.
Why the Mighty Mighty Boston's could have a moment or...
Right, or Sell Out by Real Big Fish.
Right, Real Big Fish, definitely. Because all this stuff about how once Tragic Kingdom hit, there was like major labels were signing ska bands left
right,
and right.
Exactly.
And that was like the two-year period when ska was cool, right? And that's when you came up... You already talked about this on a previous episode of how... Ska was your first big entry into
totally.
Rock music.
Yeah.
And that's, you hit that right when Tragic Kingdom came out, right?
Yeah. So. I'm looking at so they open with Tragic Kingdom.
Nice. The whole album, start to finish?
No, they open with the song.
Oh, the song Tragic Kingdom. Okay,
Tragic Kingdom, Excuse Me, Mister, Different People. Oh, they covered, not only did they cover Pawn Shop, they also covered DJs.
What's DJs?
All of the DJs surely have taken a lesson. Oh, that's right. They did the Imperial March. Like John Williams.
Like The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like an interlude during their set.
I think so. Yeah, I remember it. And then they have something called Move On and then Ghost Town. I mean, Ghost Town's definitely the Specials. They threw a bunch of covers in there to
fill. It sounds
out.
Like they played like an hour set.
Easily.
Yeah.
Encore of Spiderwebs and Obla Dee Obla Da.
Okay, that makes
last
sense.
Last track of the set was Sunday Morning.
Sick. Like yeah. Before the encore, you mean?
Yeah.
Sounds like an awesome set.
Yeah.
And the perfect time to see the band.
Exactly. It's like a little thing where people talk about Nota. I was like, well, I saw them on the Tragic Kingdom tour. No big deal.
Yeah, no. That is something brag-worthy.
But sure. I also just have come back to Tragic Kingdom since I've been in my 20s and 30s and have just been like, wow, this really holds up. Like, that album fucking rules. Mm-hmm. And I think I put it down for like a decade or two.
Yeah. Well, I remember there must have been some point where we were listening to Tragic Kingdom in like our late 20s or early 30s together.
Yeah.
Right?
It just like
we would just throw it on. We
it just re-entered the chat at some point.
Yeah. And then obviously Sunday Morning was the one you would play like constantly.
Because that song is so good. It's like one of my favorite
songs.
When
we would hang out. I feel like that was the only one that got a lot of play when we would party was Sunday Morning. But
yeah, but I did go back and buy, for some reason I stumbled upon the Beacon Street collection, like in a Newbery Comics.
As a child or
not recently
comics still even like going strong. I mean, now it's just like a variety gift store, right?
Yeah, the one in Norwood is big.
Remember when I saw your band play at Newbery Comics
in Norwood?
Yeah, that was fun.
No, but I picked up the Beacon Street collection at some point because I was like, oh, there's new No Doubt, and it was before, was it before Return of Saturn? I don't know, but it was
probably, I mean,
Return of Saturn was 2000. Yeah, it might have been right before Return of Saturn, and I was like, what is this? I was like, I don't understand what this is, because it's not a new album.
Yeah.
But I really liked a couple songs on it, like Open the Gate, Snakes, and the one with Bradley Nolan, Total Hate. Is that the one that's...
Oh, yeah. That one is... Did you listen to it again this week?
Yeah, it's like a silly...
The Bradley Nolan one is like not very good.
No.
Though there is... I was going to save this, but like there is a song on that album. If you look at... We're going to get through the whole history of how that album came about.
Yeah.
But... There is a song on that album where you're like, the whole thing about, you know, Eric Stefani, and he was the main songwriter, and then, you know, he eventually quit, and that album is like the intersection of when that moment happens. And so that album's a mix of like Eric Stefani songs and then actual songs that the rest of the band is starting to write together.
Yeah.
And there is a song, when I was listening to it this week, there's a song in there, I think it's called By the Way or By Us. I don't know. I could look it up. But I was looking at like the songwriting credits.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this one sounds a little more like Don't Speak Tragic Kingdom-y.
Yeah.
And it was actually written by Gwen and Tom DeMonte. And I was like, oh, they were already starting to like tap into what that songwriting dynamic was like without Eric Stefani.
By the way.
And you can hear it, how it's sort of already creeping into, it's got some sort of like, it's not just upstrokes, it's kind of minor guitar-y singing stuff with like a nice flowy Gwen chorus, and like it's not ska-y at all, or, you know, it was just interesting listening to that and being like, oh, you can already see how they're starting to move into the Tragic Kingdom era,
right,
while the rest of that album still has a bunch of Eric Stefani goofy ska type stuff. You know?
Tempered, though, for sure.
On Beacon Street.
Well,
or overall, I mean,
on Tragic Kingdom, it's.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I'm saying that right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It gets more and more tempered, and when Eric's out of the band, it's like a whole new thing, you know.
Yeah, and then I liked some of the stuff off of Return of Saturn, but I never bought it. I never really like had a moment with it. I appreciate it more now, I think.
Mm. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, and then after that, I just. And I talk about why I
got out.
I really got out. Yeah. I also think, and I mentioned this right before we started talking, their cover of Oi to the World by the Vandals is like my favorite Christmas song, and it fucking rules. I just give them credit for that cover because it's so good.
So for me.
Yeah. What's your deal with No Doubt?
I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but Tragic Kingdom was one of the first CDs I ever owned.
Nice.
Which is weird. It's a strange... I mean, I guess it does speak to how insanely big Tragic Kingdom was.
In 96, it was huge.
I might have even owned it like late 95. I feel like I got it like really quickly. Maybe I didn't get it until Don't Speak, like most people. But yeah, it was like Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah.
And then I got Sublime Self-Titled.
Yep.
I think because I was just in that moment.
Sure.
And Sublime Self-Titled was one of the biggest albums ever.
They were
for
happening
me.
At the same time.
As a 10-year-old, I sang What I Got at like Sleepaway Camp Karaoke and won. Went to sleepaway camp like 1 year, like a traditional 8-week sleepaway camp with one of our friends.
Yeah.
Horrible experience.
Yeah.
I've told you the story of how I have that huge scar on my leg.
you maybe said something like you got really hurt at
the
something.
First fucking week I was at this sleepaway camp. Like there was like a talent show.
Yeah.
And at the end, I wasn't performing because I was like a really nervous kid who's on my first week of sleepaway camp.
Yeah, I'm new here. Kids. No thanks.
Exactly. Yeah. And at the end of the show, they were all performing Sweet Home Chicago.
Okay.
And everyone was like, come up on stage and like sing the end of Sweet Home Chicago. And I was like, all right, I'll come up. And there's a little gap in between like the mobile stairs from which they put up to the stage to access the stage
right. And
the stage itself. I go up the stairs. My leg falls directly into that gap in which it is wide enough to like just fit it perfectly
with
like massively slicing off a chunk of my leg.
And I
got like 15 stitches along like the side of my leg where like my knee is. And like, you know, couldn't do shit for like a month. And I was like the nerdy new kid. I couldn't swim. And I like the thing got infected. And like it was all it was fucking terrible.
Who wants to hang out with the infected kid?
Ugh. Yeah, seriously. No one. It took me all summer. By the last week, someone was like, hey, you want to play ping pong with me? I feel bad for you. I was like, thanks. Never coming back here again.
Hey, Johnny Gangrene, you want to try? You want to try and hang out for a bit?
Oh my God. I can't believe you pulled my old nickname.
Johnny Gangrene? Well, I also, too, it's like, I don't want to get on stage because I don't need the spotlights on me.
And then I got up there.
And let me do this thing.
Probably someone like pulled me up and like, everyone's going up. You should go up.
Here's something embarrassing and painful at the same time.
No, I literally like, it was one of those things where I was like, oh, I fell and I stood back up and I was like, oh, I'm sure. Oh, I'm okay. I feel fine. And I looked down, just blood gushing out of my leg. People running me off stage like I had just done something wrong at an award show, you know? It was fucking terrible. But yeah, so I sang What I Got.
I'm going to let you finish, but...
We're cutting that.
You probably should.
No, I'm doubling it.
I'm going to let you finish, but...
And so yeah, I sang What I Got at Sleepaway Camp. That's why I said that. So yeah, Sublime, No Doubt, Jagged Little Pill, Jimi Hendrix's Greatest Hits. I think these are the four first CDs I ever owned. And so Tragic Kingdom was a big, big deal for me.
Yeah. Formative.
Frankly. Absolutely formative.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, like I've done with a number of bands on this show, I probably moved past it.
Yep.
Especially when I was like 13 to 16, I moved past it. And then didn't return for a while. And then I just probably re-listened to it again in college, you know, probably threw it on partying in college. And I was like, I'm really liking this a lot. I forgot. And also, and then it taps into that weird subconscious nostalgia you have because I listened to it at 10 and all that stuff. So
I have a very distinct memory of watching the video for Spiderwebs, I think. And I was like, yes, I need to buy this.
The only video I remembered is Just a Girl. I think the only like No Doubt music video I remembered was Just a
Really?
Girl.
Not even the Don't Speak one where they're like on set?
I
and...
vaguely did. Like I did. I
That's
mean,
a pretty cool video. I remember. It's like, well done.
I watched it. It was. And those, I mean, kind of a crazy idea. Where they were like, we
can talk about this a lot. Yeah.
Like we all hate each other in real life. Let's put it in a music video.
And then
this will make you feel better getting it out there. And then afterwards, they're all like, we still all hate Gwen Stefani. I don't. This did not make me feel better.
Yeah.
But, now we've gone up and down from the history of the band. We haven't even started the formal history
okay. Let's
run.
Let's get into what their deal is. Yeah. Right.
So, No Doubt, they're an American rock band from Anaheim, California, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Formed in 1986. Hard to believe.
Yeah.
Obviously, for most of their career, we got Gwen Stefani. The lady king, Gwen Stefani.
The lady king? What
guitarist Tom DeMonte, bassist Tony Cannell, and drummer Adrian Young. And then they have some touring guys who play horns and keys that are basically there, Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley.
From the very beginning.
The very beginning.
Yeah. Well, not very beginning.
Like the Tragic Kingdom. Beginning. Yeah. They're there. So yeah, some Quickly stuff, obviously in 86. It's Eric Stefani, who's Gwen's brother, is sort of like the mastermind behind the band. And he's like the creative driving force of the band to the point where he's like forcing Gwen to come on stage and maybe write some songs or sing.
Right. It sounds like he was absolutely the like, I love madness and I must form a band.
Right.
And like, sister, you're coming with me.
Exactly.
You have no choice.
And so it's him.
Real older brother energy.
Yeah. And so it's him and this guy, John Spence. Who Spence is like the main lead singer and Gwen's kind of like the cute sidekick in a way, you know?
Well, it also has a very, if you think about the reference point of being Madness and the Specials, these are both bands that have two lead singers, or like a lead singer and then like another guy.
Right. I think Spence was a little more comfortable at this point. It was kind of the vibe I got.
Yeah, like she was in it, but she was still
pretty.
Well, she was also like 15.
Yeah, 17. She was born in 69.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah. Definitely still kind of meekish. And she was mostly, I think, singing backups.
Yeah.
At the very, very beginning. Yeah, I think Spence was kind of the guy. And then they meet Tony at one of the band's early shows. And he soon joined the band on bass. And pretty soon after, they started dating.
Right.
And there was a pretty funny story where one night they were at a party and, you know, everyone was fucked up. And she and Tony, like, went for a walk and Gwen tried to kiss him. And at least as Gwen recalls, Tony was like, no, the band.
Yeah.
We can't. Like, fucking, the plane. This is how it's, like, written, basically. Yeah. And eventually, he acquiesced, is how Rolling Stone in 1996 describes it. Oh, he acquiesced to Gwen Stefani. Like, fine, I will settle for Gwen Stefani. And then, yeah, I mean...
I have a feeling it maybe wasn't...
Yeah, I know. I found the use of the word acquiesce to be interesting in this 96 Rolling Stone profile. And yeah, then basically, you know, they get deep into it. There's a funny quote here where she says, it was after that when she realized she didn't even know what nationality her new boyfriend was. And she asked Tony, what are you? And he said, Chinese. It's pretty funny. For those of you who don't know Tony Cannell, he's definitely not Chinese.
Definitely not Chinese, yeah. I mean, they come from a pretty conservative background. Like...
Well, the OC is like, you know, the heart of fucking, Reaganism.
Yes, and I think their family was totally, like...
down with Reagan.
That's their, I feel like that's the I'm just a girl thing of, like, I think there was an expectation of, like, very prescribed, traditional...
Yeah. I mean, mid-80s Orange County, California was the heart of, like, the worst conservatism in America.
Yeah.
They grew up in that. I have to assume she was raised in it, and then they probably rebelled against it. I don't know her politics very well.
This is the thing. Like, that's the thing. It's like it's
they're not. Either, she's not particularly political.
No,
right? Obviously,
if at all,
the point now where she can just be a national TV figure and be palatable to all of America.
And I'll save this for a little bit when we get there. But I think it's interesting to note where they come from, how they present when they first show up, and then how she eventually moves her career. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, Gwen's transformation is obviously fascinating to discuss, and we will.
But lots of good punk comes out of the OC, for sure. Like, you know, the Adolescents and bands like that, like in the early 80s, there was like stuff coming out of there. Bored Suburban Youth tends to make good hardcore music if they want to. So
yeah, and then the big thing that happens is that Spence kills himself.
Yeah.
I think in 88... 87, I can't remember. It was around then. It was, not
fairly early in the career.
Probably fairly early, right?
Yeah.
And they, officially break up, and then they get back together, basically saying John would have wanted us to continue. And then they met Tom DeMont on guitar pretty soon after that, and then they meet the drummer Adrian Phillips. Adrian Phillips, that's in Patriot. Adrian Young, I'm an idiot. Adrian Phillips is like a safety on the Patriots.
Wow.
And but
he's
I
done
mean,
a lot.
Yeah, he's really gotten around. Especially considering he's like a 25-year-old man in the NFL currently. He's like traveled back through time and identity. And so the main point of that little history lesson is that like they formed this like quad like pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You don't think about that a lot in terms of like the history of No Doubt that like it's been the same four people for the entire run for the most part.
Yeah.
But I mean, the big thing obviously is when Eric leaves, but being the core founding member of everything, No Doubt.
Right.
But still like the four of them, it's like, they're
and,
there.
And also
the too,
it was like an 8-year overnight success. Do you know what I mean? Like they started, it felt like overnight success. I think, cause nobody fucking knows about that first album, but it's easy. Like, cause it seemed like they just dropped out of the sky, but they had this career beforehand.
Right. Well, I guess let's talk a little bit about what that career sort of looked like,
yeah,
Alex.
Yeah, it's a good idea, man.
Because we have a fun...
Served it up for you.
We have a fun first clip for today, which is January 10th, 1990. So this is even 2 years before...
First record.
The first self-titled record comes out. And they're on a local cable access show called The Gig. First of all, good name for a show. Except I can't Google it for shit. I can find nothing on The Gig.
Oh, yeah, because it's ungoogleable.
It's, The Gig. Like, I typed in The Gig, like, local cable access.
Yeah.
California, Orange County, San Pedro, California. I couldn't find anything on The Gig.
I mean, that's not super surprising.
I don't know if I can find even any other clips of the gig. You know, it just someone saved this, you know, very
I imagine
special
not all
performance.
Of them, yeah, I can't imagine all the clips have the same cultural cachet that this one does.
No.
Now, before we get started with our second band, let's tell those of you who'd like to be on our show how you can be here with us on the gig. Send us your demo tape along with your bio, and please don't forget your phone number so we can call you as soon as possible. Our address is Solo Productions, P.O. Box 2791, San Pedro, California, 90731. Now here's our second band for this evening, No Doubt and Up Yours.
And so they're going to be doing two songs.
Yeah.
They're doing Up Yours, and they're doing Big City Train. And it is funny how this starts, where I did the intro for this.
Yeah.
And she's like, No Doubt and Up Yours. And I was like, when I first heard that, I was like, is Up Yours like a band
performing with? Yeah.
Like, who is Up Yours exactly? But no, it's a song that they're going to start with. But right off the bat, okay,
logo.
So we got a logo. We zoom in on the No Doubt drum head. And why? So what's the obsession with ska bands doing like a kicker intro? This isn't a song. They're just doing a kicker intro before the proper song starts, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a part of Up Yours.
No.
Right? But yeah, so it starts off with that little kicker. And I mean, Alex, if you were going to be in session as the fashion doctor today,
it's too much. There's like, I need like a trauma team. I can't.
Yeah, we need like a series of professionals.
Yeah,
needs to work with individually with like each member of the band today.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, we can just start off with Tony in an incredible Hawaiian shirt.
Yep,
little baggy shorts,
sunglasses that are too small inside.
Oh my god,
small sunglasses.
Gwen strolls in these like big brown baggy overalls,
and it looks like she's wearing it backwards. But I don't think that's. Do you know how generally?
Well, yeah, because the straps are in the front, but I guess that's just the style.
I know, it's just but
design.
It's designed that way. Yeah.
And then Tom.
She also seems to be wearing like big slippers.
Yeah, so those are her socks popping out in front, huh?
Is that? I don't know what it is.
Or they're just the weird sort of coloration of her shoes.
But everyone's wearing crazy shirts.
We got a Cubs hat. We got a Scally cap, which I was forcefully corrected on last episode.
Not a beret.
And then when I called it a beret, and Kenny said my punk card has been taken away.
Yeah.
Tom is probably the most normal looking one, except he's got a ponytail.
He's wearing a No Doubt shirt.
He definitely, I wrote in my notes, is hiding and holding back some of his metal vibes and influences because he's like a metal guy.
Yeah.
You can kind of see it on screen. Then we also have some auxiliary percussion.
Extra dudes?
Two extra dudes. I don't even know who these dudes are.
One guy kind of like has a tambourine at some point.
Is a tambourine. They got some cowbell.
Yeah.
The other guy, I'm not sure what he does. The other guy has cowbell and tambourine. I think the other guy might just be like a hype dude that's like a friend of theirs.
Yeah. I mean, this is real 80s two-tone
the song.
Stuff. You know, it's very madness, very specials. It's also, you know, Mighty Mighty Bosstones was happening at this time, just the beginning of that. And then
we got a sax, we got a trumpet.
Yeah. And like Bim Scala Bim from Boston was another one who was doing this kind of stuff, the Toasters. So this.
Yeah, I definitely thought of the Toasters when I heard this.
It's like. What I read, it's like this period from 87 to 90 is just this weird fashion no man's land that I feel like.
Well, it was like hair metal.
Well, it was strange. It was like dressing casual. Everyone looked weird.
Yeah.
Like nobody, everything looked weird. Like all the clothes just look weird. Although Eric Stefani actually looks kind of cool. He kind of looks like he could be in.
He's so like lanky though. Like
yeah.
Eric is so lanky and like the keyboard sound.
Oh, he's wearing shorts.
The keyboard sound is kind of straight up like high school Casio sounding.
Oh, you can hear it right now. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Well, this even the new one, the second song we're about to go into, which is Big City Train, I think he changes the settings on the Casio.
Yeah.
It sounds like marimba-esque.
Yes, totally.
Right?
But it's very...
But the only other thing I wanted to note is like Tony right away is like a crazy talent on bass in this clip.
He's already slapping.
Oh, well, yeah. Cool so the lines. Second one, now he's doing his like best like Flea impression.
Right.
And my whole thing on Big City Train was like, oh, this sounds like Uplift Mofo Party Plan.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. So they're in California in 1990 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, this is right when the Chili Peppers are huge in Southern California.
Yeah. And also,
probably right before Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Would have been,
right? So like, Uplift and Freaky Styley,
right?
You know, all those things were huge in their scene.
They come across as pretty funk on that first record, like
this song in particular, Big City Train, is funky.
Yeah,
it's basically the whole. This is kind of their whole thing early on. It's exactly. Combining ska
and funk.
Yeah,
Skank and Pickle, man. This makes me think Skank and Pickle was around at this time. Yeah, there's a lot of this.
But yeah, Tony's like slap funk bass.
Yeah,
when I saw this, I was like, what the fuck? This dude is. Slapping and funking everywhere. I did not know he did this shit.
Well, he does it, no doubt. In some of the
not the way that he's.
It's not as
the slap technique he has on these like early records is like so. It's so like forward and like crazy. So what's your thoughts on how Gwen sounds on this clip?
She sounds like her.
Yeah,
and I mean she's not as.
There's some little rough moments when she tries to go like. The ooze over the horns and stuff. It's like, but her voice, you know, the basis of her voice still is like, oh, that's Gwen Stefani.
She's still got her, like, what makes her her.
Yeah. She's not particularly cool in this.
No, but she also, but she has energy. She doesn't look awkward.
No.
Which I was kind of expecting her to be a little more awkward. She seems.
I mean, some of those little shimmies that she's doing right now.
Yeah, the
like,
moves aren't great, but it doesn't look like she doesn't know what to do with herself.
I guess the outfit doesn't really help her.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? What I'm saying when she doesn't look like. She looks like she knows what she's doing, even if it's like kind of dumb.
Yeah, no, right. And she's also surrounded, clearly, they're all very talented players, even if this song is like not particularly doing it for me.
Whatever. Yeah.
But they're obviously all very. Talented, and I think enough. We're at this point now where Tom and like Tony like headbang, like they like headbang on the breakdown. It like it definitely has that like Uplift Mofo breakdown vibe, and I mean I wrote it's not the other thing I think we're not there yet. Like Tom does like this is not like I can't get over Uplift. He does like a Hillel Slovak type solo, like the little like funky like like it's all of this is very to me like Chili Pepper stuff. And at the end of the clip, she does say that Flea like produced a demo of theirs at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you caught this. Tony says Flea from the Chili Peppers produced our demo, and Tony and Angelo from Fishbone sang backups on it.
Fishbone is that's the reference I was missing. Fishbone. This is all Fishbone. This is like so Fishbone.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, Flea produced their demo in like 1989 or 1990 or whatever. Like, I guess you just call up Flea at that point. They're not super huge. He would do something like that. But I don't know. It probably means that like they were getting some attention in like this little Southern California scene.
I mean, it makes sense. Like they're like a good ska band. You know? Not like a band that I like care about, but they're like they are pulling off the genre.
Yes.
You know,
but it'd also be kind of thing. Or if you saw this in 1990, you'd probably be like, "All right, see you like the next like college party, maybe, and it'll be fun." Or you know, but it doesn't surprise me that like even 92 self-titled like flops,
right?
You know, so they interview him after the show.
We got two more additional No Doubt shirts now.
Do we? Who else is wearing them?
Well, Adrian, right there.
Oh yes, okay.
And then look, this guy covered in tattoos.
Back
in 89.
That was the other, that's the trumpet player.
Yeah.
I wonder if Tom like had some like metal friends who like also played horns. Yeah. He like called in.
They're all just like pulling from the metal community.
Yeah. But so they interview the band, but like, you know, right away, who does she interview?
Gwen.
Right.
She's the lead singer.
Right away. Yeah, she's the lead singer. Absolutely. But like right away, she's just like, I'm going to talk to Gwen Stefani and no one else in the band, which does seem quite prescient for what we're going to, you know, happen and what we're going to talk about. But yeah, it's funny. She has this moment where she asks Gwen, where are you playing next? And she like stutters over like the cafe in Spanky's Cafe. She's like, yeah, we're playing in Spanky's and Tony's like, cafe. It's cafe, Gwen. She just seemed quite nervous to be on the gig on local access. And then there's this moment here where they ask, who writes the music for your band?
And they all point at
Eric. They all point at Eric, but she's talking to Gwen. And Gwen goes, lately, you've all kind of been participating, actually. Eric does a lot of the writings and he's super creative and stuff, but we all participate a little bit. Which is already just so funny how all this shit with Eric and Gwen and...
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's all just already all out there in this weird little 1990 cable access clip, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just interesting, too, because, like, for a band to get off the ground, you need somebody who's, like, just cranking stuff out. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's what they all said. Eric just loved writing.
Yeah.
He hated
touring. Clearly was the engine of this.
He hated touring. He hated people. He hated the scene. He just liked being holding up in a room and writing some fucking songs. That was it. You know?
Clearly, No Doubt would not get to where they were. I mean, obviously, right? They wouldn't have been No Doubt.
He was
the impetus for this band.
He brought them all together. Yeah. They all, you know, of course. And the only funny thing at the end, she goes, up next, Mirror Image. And so I had to look up who Mirror Image was, and I found them. They're just like a very stereotypical, like, hair metal, pop metal, long sort of flowing acoustic guitar hair stuff.
Huh.
Nothing. They had like one music video. I was like, oh, Mirror Image. But it seemed like another, you
know. Funny that you couldn't find any videos of the gig.
Yeah, right.
With the hot talent they had coming through.
So yeah, they, you know, basically they finally signed to Interscope in 1991.
Yeah.
And they come out with that first record, self-titled, No Doubt. Did you listen to self-titled at all?
So I actually bought the self-titled at some point. I can't remember. I was like, oh, there's the first No Doubt record. I'll check it out.
Sure.
And I was just like,
I had never listened to it before this
week. I had. Okay. So I knew Man in the Box, and I'd seen that dumb video that they have for it. But
yeah. It seems like the jump from that to Beacon Street is quite large.
Yeah, really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's when they're still kind of all over the map stylistically, where it's like a lot of funk, a lot of like kind of cheesy 80s sounding stuff in 92.
Uplift.
Yeah.
It's still an Uplift vibe.
There's a silliness to it. And the songs are not particularly personal. They're just kind of like whatever.
Right. So yeah, they go on tour in 92 after the album comes out. Tour flops.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a real like
tour flops.
Failure of a record for them.
I mean, especially, they're on Interscope. I mean, they're on a big-ass label.
Yeah.
And I mean, the album sells 30,000 copies. The tour is a total disaster. Eric is like, you know, I fucking hate this. I fucking hate everyone in the band.
Yeah.
Of course, Gwen and Tony are like this hot couple and having a great time, probably. And Eric's the brother, right? And they described in the Rolling Stone article, there'd always been a conflict between Eric and Tony, the carefree artist and the careful businessman, the singer's brother and the singer's lover. That is a weird dynamic early on like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Always the brother, never the boyfriend.
That's what he said. Had some weird fucking issues. And then Eric encouraged other band members to write more songs. He sometimes felt threatened when they did. Shocker.
Yep.
And we're skipping a little bit ahead here, but there's this crazy note from the Rolling Stone article when they say, in 1994, Tom and Gwen came up with Just a Girl, and Eric couldn't understand why everyone was going crazy about it.
Huh.
Why does everyone like this song, Just a Girl? Huh? I don't get it. Really, Eric? You didn't get why that song, the rest of the band was like super stoked about that song? And just clearly, you know, being protective of himself and, you know, seeing the writing on the wall.
Where his thing is getting taken away.
Totally, right. Yeah. And the crazy note to think about Eric, he was working as an animator for The Simpsons at the time.
Right.
And going back and forth between No Doubt and working as an animator for The Simpsons. Not just an animator for The Simpsons, Alex. He's working as an animator in the golden era of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He drew some of, like, the most, like, important, significant, like, television programming in the history of TV.
Yeah.
Eric Stefani did. It was a crazy little fact.
The guy's fucking talented.
Obviously. You know, I think they say basically part of him was happy for Gwen and starting to come out of her shell, but obviously still just kind of like jealous.
Yeah.
And not dealing with it particularly.
I'm trying to think,
well,
did I read a quote from her saying at some point, like, we took his band from him? Like,
yeah, there's all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even after.
Where there's awareness of it. Where
I have
like,
a quote here. Yeah. I we'll get to it eventually, but there was some quote I wrote down. After Tragic Kingdom is like gone platinum.
Yeah.
And they're starting to plan for like the next record. Like, I'll have to scroll. Well, I'll find the direct quote when I scroll further down my notes. But there's something basically on the lines of Gwen being like, well, we have to get Eric back in the band. It's his band.
Right.
It's like, motherfucker. Like, you understand? Like, you just had like one of the biggest hits of the year.
Yeah.
And you're talking about how it's Eric's stuff. It just, I don't know if she said that out of love or, you know, lack of self-esteem or something. But it's like, dude, it's not Eric Stefani's band anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you just released one of the biggest hits in the world.
Well,
right?
So what's the timeline of him leaving? So
like 94. So they use some of his songs. He's basically out by the end of 94.
But he's got a bunch of credits on Tragic Kingdom, right?
And
he plays on
and Beacon Street.
Doesn't he play on Tragic Kingdom?
No, I don't think he plays on it.
Okay.
Maybe he has a couple of older cuts or something, but I'm pretty sure he leaves basically around 94, but they do still use some of his songs because the band had been playing those songs on Beacon Street.
Yeah.
So even like there are a couple songs at Beacon Street that are just credited to Eric.
Right.
And then in 96, I don't know, pull up the credit list for Tragic Kingdom, but I assume... No, Eric has Don't Speak as a credit.
Yep.
I know that.
Different People.
Okay. Him and Gwen.
Sunday Morning.
Yeah. So, I mean...
You Can Do It.
He's all over it.
He's the only writer on Tragic Kingdom. He's on Ended on This. That's what I'm saying. He's like on that record. Like,
yeah, but I don't think he performs on it. I don't think he performs on it, dude.
He does.
Oh, he does?
Yep. Piano and Keyboards.
I thought he left it at the end
of 90. No, I knew. Because isn't he on the cover?
Yeah, but I think they photoshopped him in, or they did a really awkward.
But he played. It's the last one to feature him. He plays on it.
Okay, I didn't realize that for some reason, I thought they just use his songs. But
yeah, so it says it was the final album to feature the original keyboardist Eric Stefani, who left the band in 1994. Released on October 10th, 1995.
Okay, so they were recording it throughout 94.
That's my guess. Yeah.
Okay. So did Beacon Street just come out like months before?
Wow, listen to this. Tragic Kingdom was recorded in 11 studios in Los Angeles.
Hey, this is going
to
be a thing that keeps coming up with
starting in March 93.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
This is going to be a problem in the back half of their career, this approach to recording.
Yeah, I believe that. Anyways,
Yeah, that's nuts.
I knew he was like more involved in the record. That's why when they went to the next one, they were like, wait, this one's really not going to be with him.
I think I just always think of it as a 96 record, even though it was released in like October 95 and recorded like a year and a half before.
Right.
So that's why it makes sense that Eric could have left the band. But I mean, that is also, you leave the band at the end of 94, you're hearing these songs that are being produced for Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah.
You must really not want to be in a band.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, you must have seen there was something kind of special going on. And he was just like, I don't want to fucking do this. You know, I'm going to go work at The Simpsons, which, I mean, it's fine. Good call. You still.
Yeah. I mean, and even if the songs coming out are great, it could be a pretty unpleasant experience.
Oh, of course. Obviously, you know it was. Obviously, he fucking hated it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing, speaking of breakups, was Tony and Gwen.
Yeah.
Breaking up. You know, it happens. He says, I started feeling claustrophobic or in the band. And he had never had an experience of seeing other girls since he was 16 years old. Because, I mean, they had been together for six or seven years.
Right. Yeah.
And it just took a long time for them to break up because they're in this band together. And they were, like, afraid to, you know, afraid to do it, afraid of breaking up the band. You know?
Sure.
And, of course, the breakup of the band inspires the most famous, well-known songs of their entire run.
I mean, in some ways, it spurred
everything.
Their career.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, out of chaos comes, I don't know, what's the saying?
Out of chaos comes Platinum Records.
Yeah, sure. That's a saying, right?
Baby.
I think, you know, that leads us up to this moment, I think. They break up. You know, it wasn't easy. They're going back and forth. Gwen is calling Tony, being like, hey, I wrote this cool song about our breakup. Can you listen to the lyrics?
This part is wild to me.
Tony would be like, okay, sure. Like, really? You're going to force him to be like, hey, listen to the song. I think it's Are You Happy Now? That's the real one that's like, you're a piece of shit and I hate you. And Gwen's like, isn't this rad? Isn't this song rad? Tony's like, yeah, it's really great.
Yeah. But I mean, he was, and it's just a thing where he clearly initiated the breakup, right? He was the one who like.
Oh, definitely.
So it's like on one hand, you're like, oh man, it must really suck to have his ex-girlfriend. But I don't know. Yeah. The whole thing is just really weird to think about.
Yeah. There's this like moment in the Rolling Stone article where they're like, yeah, what about, Gwen is like, it's not that bad. And it's like, what about when you call him a parasite in Sunday Morning? And she's like, oh yeah, I forgot about that bridge. when I called Tony a parasite to his face.
Well, it's like every song is about him.
Yeah, the whole record's about him, obviously. And then she starts dating Gavin Rossdale pretty soon. Is this before? It must have been after Tragic Kingdom,
definitely
right?
Was after.
All right, let's talk about Gavin after that.
Yeah.
So Tragic Kingdom comes out. Do you have the record thing up? It must have been like October 95,
yeah.
And the first single off that record... Of seven singles,
yep.
Even though six and seven, I don't think were real singles. The first one we have is Just a Girl, it's called, which we've already discussed, Alex.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to perform it on January 30th, 1996, on Conan O'Brien.
This is right when this is hit.
Everybody, we're back. Folks, my next guests tonight are here making their network television debut, performing a song from their new album, Tragic Kingdom. Folks, please give a nice, warm welcome to No Doubt.
Yes. Well, I mean, so the album comes out in October. This is a couple months later. But this is their network television debut. He's holding up Tragic Kingdom.
Yep.
The album has certainly not taken off in any real fashion yet, to how we would think about it, yeah. Right? But Just a Girl is definitely like...
Yeah, there was released...
There are things going on, right?
Just a Girl released September 21st, 95 as a single.
And right away, we got Tom with a sellout t-shirt.
This is them in their form that I pictured them.
Think of them. Well,
they're
Gwen.
Iconic.
Gwen looks like... You know, the Just a Girl video, at least yep. the first half before the ponytail stuff. This is certainly, yes.
the ponytail stuff.
Yeah. She has this look early on in the Just a Girl video, and then it becomes like the more iconic looking thing, I think. It's like when she's like in the car.
Yeah.
And yeah, Tom's guitar is sounding like huge and on point. We got Tony throughout this clip kind of doing like alien ant farm dances.
Problem.
Was this the reference point you had? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about.
I don't know how else to describe it. Like alien ant farm, like the fucking Michael Jackson cover.
You know
video.
What it makes me think of? The 30-yard stare from
the Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
It is a similar move.
It's that.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm a confusing...
Yeah.
Enigma.
But, right. And then he does kind of.
He does
like
the robot.
The robot. That's exactly what it is. He does like the robot. He
and
does
it's like
a cool.
You don't have to.
He does like a hip robot dance. It's strange. And Gwen wearing a t-shirt that says Gwen.
Yeah.
Cool move, I guess.
She just is super cool here.
Oh, Gwen looks incredible.
Just badass.
I mean, incredible. Like, I mean, obviously, this is, like you said, the iconic thing we would think about for Gwen Stefani.
Right.
And synchronized dancing from the horn and key section.
Yeah.
Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley doing some... They'll do this throughout their career.
Yeah. Keys are a bit high for me in this...
Like the mix is a bit high? Yeah, but also I feel like Just a Girl... I think of the keys.
The importance of the keys.
I certainly think of this song and a few others, Sunday Morning, where like the keys are, you know, the synth soundy keys are like a huge part of it. Obviously now we're hearing the little synth solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But I mean, just... Yeah, her look is just so cool. Like, there aren't a whole lot of singers that make their style, like, immediately iconic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And she totally does. Like, with the
little green wristbands.
Yeah.
The hairstyle.
Big baggy, like, bondage pants almost. And then
we're just going to see her midriff for the next 15 years.
Yeah. Here's the robot looking pretty silly.
Like a little salute. Like
he's like a toy soldier.
He's not
going to
do this again. I mean, Tony does some weird stuff, but like this vibe from him
is really like it's
bizarre.
You're doing too much.
Oh my God, yeah. Everyone, please watch the middle 2:40 to 3-minute version of this clip where Tony is just doing the weirdest shit.
Also, Adrian Young always on point.
Like, yeah.
Just a really good drummer.
I was going to say, I mean, I didn't notice him a ton this week until. Excuse Me, Mister, which we'll talk about faster.
Yeah.
But he is incredibly solid.
Totally.
And obviously is one of those drummers that sits back and serves the song in a way that is super functional and important.
Yeah.
But he does get lost in the shuffle a little bit between...
There's a lot to look at.
Gwen, Tom, and Tony are very distinct, interesting players. Then McNair and Bradley on horn and keys have their own very specific thing going on.
Yes.
And then, you know, routing it out is kind of Adrian. You know,
but the scream. Cool,
yeah, these screams.
The screams
that
at
Gwen
the end
does,
are so good. Yeah,
the scream there. Also, they'll scream on all those little things that I fear. You know, like very like snarly thing that she does. Just a lot of like attitude. A lot of
attitude.
That's
the thing. I mean, like, I don't find her to be a particularly good singer.
No,
but
especially early on here, she hasn't figured it out particularly well. All that great. Even like she doesn't totally hit the chorus notes here.
Yeah,
in a way that like you know you'd be like. Wow, she's super on point. Like, that's not happening.
And I mean, I can see how some people would have been really, like, annoyed by this because she does get a little, like, Betty Boopy in her, like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, she gets very.
But also, let's think about the song she's singing.
Oh, no, totally. I think they work completely, you know, but I can imagine someone would be like, oh, she's barely singing. She's just making noises.
Yeah,
you know?
Or like the little. You know, she does, like, the puckered and pursed, like, baby lips in the breakdown, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's playing.
No, but she's.
She's
but
playing
it's great.
A part.
It's tons of personality.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, she just jumps off. I mean, this is the most reductive thing. Gwen Stefani jumps off the screen. Like, no shit, right? But, like, totally. Yeah. But I mean, that network debut, good. Stuff.
But also, those songs, or this song and other ones like it, really hit this like perfect mix of ska punk, new wave.
Yep.
That is their like chef's kiss, perfect.
Yeah.
You know, which is why Tragic Kingdom succeeds, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's the perfect little middle ground of that.
Yeah. And then they kind of waver back and forth.
Then things get a little wild.
In different ways. But we're going to keep talking about Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to jump a year. So quite a bit has changed in a year for the musical group, no doubt. You know, Spiderwebs comes out as the second single. Very successful.
Really big.
Huge, huge song. Just a Girl also was one of those like top 40 mainstream Hot 100 hits. Like
lots of MTV.
All of these, lots of MTV. All of these singles, these first three, I think are all like top 30 Hot 100 hits. And then the singles after that kind of dip. They're big like rock mainstream hits or whatever, but they're not like what we're about to talk about.
We didn't call them hits. They're like really good album tracks that everybody knows.
Yeah, no, but they're hits in that like they're getting radio. They got radio play for sure. Like Sunday Morning got radio play. Excuse Me, Mister got radio play. It just wasn't
right.
It wasn't the first three, and it wasn't this third one we're going to talk about now.
Yeah,
which I you know it's their only like name the song. Don't Speak. I think everyone knows what we're talking about.
Yep.
It's written by Gwen and Eric, and you know, right after their breakup. It's released as the third single off the record after Just a Girl and Spiderwebs. And it broke the previous record when it topped the Billboard Hot 100 airplay for 16 non-consecutive weeks.
Dude, this song was everywhere.
16 non-consecutive weeks. The set the record.
Yeah.
For number one.
It's fucking huge. The song is everywhere.
It's crazy. Like, and I guess I'm sure this is definitely the song I thought about the most as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old. It's probably the one that connected me with me the most, just, you know, popular culture wise was
it's on the radio constantly.
Was just everywhere. Another Casey Kasem song.
Oh, totally.
Another, you know, top five coming home from Hebrew school, Casey Kasem song. Like no fucking doubt. So yeah, it also won. It got nominated for Grammy of the Year, for Song of the Year, and Pop Best Pop Performance by a duo or a group for Don't Speak. And this is where it just goes from like, oh, this is a huge hit, to this is a like once in a generation like massive hit kind of thing. And we're going to talk about them performing it, Alex, on December 30th.
Yep.
December 30th. What the fuck no? December 7th.
Okay.
1996 on Saturday Night Live, hosted by Martin Short. It's fun.
Yeah.
I was happy to see Martin pop up here. I looked it up. It was only the second time he had ever hosted Saturday Night Live. He hosted in 86. Obviously, he used to be on Saturday Night Live as a regular.
Obviously.
The big part of his career took off, even though he's part of what some people consider like a very bad era of Saturday Night Live. And he hosted in 86 with Steve Martin and Chevy Chase. And then he came back 10 years later and hosted it with musical guest, No Doubt. And then he hosted it a few more times in 2012 and in 2022.
I watched a clip of him like yesterday.
Dude, I love Martin Short
as Jiminy
much.
Glick.
Jiminy Glick is like one of the
interviewing
all, like, funniest characters of all time.
Chris Cooper?
The guy from American Beauty?
No, not Chris Cooper. Sorry. Something Cooper, SNL guy, cabin boy. No. Oh, man.
Chris Kattan.
No. Oh, I'm probably getting both of his names wrong. He's
they spell and pronounce their names completely
he's
differently.
He's in Harold and Kumar.
Oh, Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott. There it is. I don't know why I said
another incredible comedian.
Him,
I love Chris
him getting interviewed by Jiminy Glick, I was like losing my fucking mind.
Jiminy Glick is an insane national treasure, dude. I love Jiminy
It was
Glick.
Crazy, yeah.
And Martin Short is super fucking funny. I love Martin Short.
I like how there was that article where like, people, why are you forcing Martin Short on us? And like the whole internet was like, fuck off.
Yeah, and everyone was basically like, oh, the only five good days of the internet in the past 10 years was everybody defending Martin Short.
Right.
And posting like Jiminy Click and like Clifford clips online.
Yeah.
Being like, let's laugh about Clifford for an entire week. I was like, down. If it just took someone attacking Martin Short.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, I don't know if it was because they don't like Only Murders in the Building, which Martin Short's easily the best part of that. Pretty mediocre show.
It was an opinion.
No offense, Selena.
It's an opinion I don't support, so I didn't read it.
You know what? That's healthy, and I'm proud of you.
Yeah, thank you.
So we're going to watch No Doubt be introduced by Martin Short, Alex.
Ladies and gentlemen, No Doubt. Every day together, always.
A nice little cut here from Martin Short being on a TV.
Yeah.
Introducing and then zooming back out to see No Doubt. I don't know. I've never seen this trick before on SNL before. Sort of a strange little design.
That is strange, yeah.
And so, yeah, they're going to be doing Don't Speak. And Gwen looks quite different than we had just seen a year before.
I mean, she looks like a movie star.
She looks like Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. She looks like fucking Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Her microphone is... God, look at that face. Oh, my God. Her mic's like covered in like this expansive bouquet of flowers.
Yeah.
Which looks very cool. And yeah, she's looking very romantic.
Yes.
Very serious. The curly, tussled hair. The backdrop is black here for the intro sing part. Very nice, like, dramatic stage design and presence going on here.
Yep.
You know?
She also sounds really good in this intro. Like, so... Because this song was driven into our heads and it was like the cheesy, quote-unquote cheesy ballad, I was like, ugh, I'm not sure if I really want to watch this clip. And then I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Like, she sounds really good. It's a really interesting song. Like, like the weird, like, flamenco guitar line. And then, like, dude, like...
Yeah.
It's just a really interesting... I don't know what the reference point is, you know? It's like, this is this big rock ballad.
It's a big rock ballad. And then, like you said, it has a little... of the ska flowery dance stuff in the chorus where, you know, Tom is like, he's not doing upstrokes, but it's a little like, right? And then obviously when we get to like the acoustic guitar solo, like you said, that it's not ska, but it does have a different sort of, like, you know, 60s or 70 era flavor to it.
Yeah.
In a like raw sort of way that is just, like you said, it's a combine of a lot of different stuff that it makes it very interesting and appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Hence it being one of the biggest hits of the 90s. Right.
Yeah. I mean, the juggernaut of a chorus, as I've said about things in the past, but like, I mean, really is so good.
Gwen has like some like Menti Indian henna tattoos on her hand. This or something.
I was going to say the cultural appropriation tags start getting thrown around at this moment.
Yes. Did it already get here it did?
Well, she right away is wearing the bindi, like...
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, right. And just a girl.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I'm not saying there was a cultural, like, discourse about it, but... Mm-hmm.
Here comes the acoustic guitar solo.
Which sounds great.
So good.
Sounds great.
It has that little felt string sound to it, you know, because I don't think this is
plugged. No, it's nylon strings.
It's nylon, so it's not plugged in. I think it's mics, right?
I don't know.
And just, you can feel Tom's fingers on the strings in a way.
He nails it.
He just absolutely nails it. It's great. But yeah, Gwen just sounds much better than on Just a Girl from Conan.
Yes.
Like, just generally speaking, sounds much better. I don't know if it's just a better song for her, vocal range-wise, but...
Well, she's also not jumping around like a crazy person.
True. Which is a problem we're going to see in the last clip of the day.
Yeah. But I also think they must have just come off a whole year of touring.
True.
You know?
Yeah. And like intense, like now you're in the spotlight, you better get your shit together.
Yeah, totally.
That's definitely right. This is the thing we see.
And it looks like they did that.
This is the thing we see on our show every time.
Yeah.
Right? When we have these big jumps from I feel like
the first
exposure. Well, I also feel like we always... I feel like this happened multiple times with multiple bands now. The Conan to SNL pipeline.
Right. Yeah,
they start on Coded and then they break out on SNL. Right.
True.
I feel like that's happened a couple times now. But yeah, the keys on the outro sound great too.
Mm-hmm.
And it does end here where it goes back to the shadows. Right. It's a very dramatic thing where it gets dark again on the stage. And I was like, oh God, if they don't turn the stage lights back on, I'm going to like feel bad.
Yeah.
Would it have felt bad if, like, everyone clapped and the rest of the band was in darkness?
Right.
You know, like, I was just standing there spotlit, and I was like, oh, God, turn the stage lights back on. And they do, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But
you know what I also noticed, dude? She's not looking at Tony, but...
The whole clip? Or?
Anytime she, like, looks over to the left, I'm like, oh, my God, she's staring at him while she's singing words about him.
This is probably what everyone was thinking about.
I'm already thinking about it, but, like, that's not what's happening. She's not staring him down.
Right.
Like... But it's just so interesting how that I immediately was like, oh, they're having an awkward moment on stage. I like couldn't not think about it.
Yeah. Well, I think this Tony will get this for a few years, obviously.
Years.
There was some story about him being in an international airport and some random dude came up to him and went, hush, hush, darling. And he was like, it's cool you know my song, but also like, don't do that to me, dude. And so Don't Speak. Really good.
Really good.
Really, really good. Now they're going to do a second song, as is customary on Saturday Night Live, Alex. Mm-hmm. They're going to do Excuse Me, Mister, which is technically the fourth or fifth single, right?
Yeah. But also, if you own the album, it's track two, so people know it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
True. Not my favorite song on Tragic Kingdom. I don't know how you feel about it.
I like it a lot.
Okay. It's not. It's definitely a lower tier Tragic Kingdom song for me.
I call it certainly top half for me.
Yeah, maybe. For me, I don't think it is.
Some clunkers in the middle there, man.
Yeah, well, this is another problem that we're going to experience. All of their albums have this problem of fat. But yeah, so they're going to do, but they tease Spiderwebs to start here? Why did they do that?
I think it must be.
We got Nirvana. We got, you know, this is like the Rate Me performance. Like, why did they tease it in a very similar way?
I think that's what they're doing is like, my thought is they played this on tour and everyone really liked it when they played Excuse Me, Mister. And they were like, this isn't a single, but like people fucking love this song. So let's do this. Let's do the cool, like the album track.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
That has like, it's much more high energy. It's much more punk than Don't Speak. That's for fucking sure. Right. So.
But also, why didn't they could have just done that and not, I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It's a cool little moment. I
think
it was
just messing with expectation of like, oh, we're going to play the other big single, but oh, actually, this is the new single.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's cool. But like you said, yeah, this is like Gwen's in like punk mode on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Now
totally
she,
different outfit. Totally Everyone's in different outfits except for Tony.
Right. Yeah, she's just got, you know, black pants, a little striped tank top. Still kind of the tussled hair, but even now it's a little less like curly and stuff. Like, she definitely has come now and like, is back into like I'm a badass like rocker chick thing.
I mean, I think the performance is great. It suffers a little bit from feeling less full after Don't Speak, which has so much interesting stuff going on.
But McNair and Bradley definitely bringing it on the hype. Hype dancing moves in the back there, like super high energy and fun.
And like, Tony too. Tony's like jumps around.
McNair and Bradley look super fun to watch, like this entire run of clips. But yeah, Gwen sounded great. The backing vocals are now getting worked in.
Yep.
This is something you didn't have in Conan before.
Right.
We're actually having backing vocals for Gwen, which are good. That was like a thing they needed to have. Like, it's something that just a girl in Conan kind of like suffered from.
Well, that's the thing that's really interesting about Tragic Kingdom is there's a lot of Gwen singing her own backup vocals.
Yeah.
Not just double, like literally singing her own harmonies. You know?
Right.
Which is cool. I thought it was an interesting idea for that record. But
yeah. Her vocal, on Tragic Kingdom, it does become a little like overbearing at moments.
Yeah, like Sunday Morning, I mean, is like, that's all like, you know, four Gwens.
Right. Tony's still rocking that tracksuit.
Hell yeah.
Tony, and then there's a little slap going on on this one. I guess it's just part of his like style.
He works it in. It's a little less clunky.
Right, exactly. But I mean, it mostly works. And then Gwen's like histrionics on the verses here are working great. And she's just an incredible stage presence. There's no denying it. But yeah, Tony, like in the chorus on this one, if you listen to it, it's just like the dancing on the bass, like Mike Mills vibes. Like he is like, obviously it doesn't sound like R.E.M. But I'm saying the way that like Tony can work in these like very quick melodies.
We'll hear it on this stuff. Yeah, like, he's a great bass player.
So good.
When we get to Simple Kind of Life, I have a lot to say about it. But like, you know, he's awesome.
he's got to be up there in like the best bassists we've talked about on this show so far.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The people.
And subtle. Like not in a way that's like, look what I'm doing.
But I don't feel like people like think of him as some like bass icon or anything. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, really, really good. Gwen with some funny attitude in the breakdown bridge part. And like I said before, it's kind of the first time I noticed Adrian. Like really, really fast and on point and like fun fills.
Yeah.
Fun little like verse to chorus stuff going on.
I will say, even just these two clips though, that like where it's almost the same year, right?
Well, I mean,
95, were they both 96?
They're both, well, it was January 96 and December 96. So it's a year, same year, but a year apart virtually.
Where you get the first one, which is really the like kind of like rebellious, angsty teen girl kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you get Don't Speak, which is the like very like serious. It just speaks to her like frame of mind when all this is happening. You know what I mean? Where she came out with and this stuff getting recorded in 90, starting to get recorded in 93 speaks a lot to that too.
Yeah. Then at the very end here, I just wanted to point out because we've been having this really fun run of like closing credit SNL things, and you know Gwen is standing there right next to Martin Short and Chevy Chase, who's a special guest tonight.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, he had like a clip or something. I didn't watch it, but then the rest of the bit. So then Tony flashes his stomach, Adrian flashes his stomach, and then Tony like starts like shaking his ass. They just look so funny and goofy, and they start like grinding on screen
They're
and stuff.
Having a good time.
Tony and Adrian just like. Grinding up on one another to like the beta de peru, like those jazzy yeah. sax solo of SNL. It was very funny. Excuse me, Mister. Good, somewhat forgettable. At least his performance. Don't speak.
Awesome.
Like killed.
Yeah.
So good.
I think my opinion of that, excuse me, Mister, is higher than yours.
But, oh, it definitely is. I'm saying even that performance, I was kind of like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's good. I'm not really going to remember it. Yeah. The Don't Speak performance is like star turn. Oh my God. Yeah. This is like unbelievable
yeah.
thing going on. You know?
Really, you know, a song that like a ballad from a, like a quote unquote punky kind of band is a real
yeah.
Dicey thing. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Thank God they pulled it off.
Yeah, true. Like a Drive by Incubus. Right? I mean,
yeah.
it's a much, much, much worse song, to be
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, similar sort of, like, we're going to bust out the acoustic. Busting out an acoustic guitar, for no doubt at that point, was a very strange novelty.
Yeah.
Which becomes less strange and used to less effect on the next album we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Right. So this comes out. It's, you know, they've become just a massive, one of the biggest bands in America for the next 2.5 years.
Huge expectation set.
Yes. Massive. as you've noted multiple times on our show, Alex. Impossible to meet.
Impossible to meet.
Impossible.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it drove them insane. And it's why it takes them 5 years to come out with another
record.
It's
the first time without Eric Stefani.
Yes. So this is the quote I have from before that I'll read in full now.
Yeah.
So they have a few new songs. This Rolling Stone is profiling them in like early 97, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe like late 96, early 97. They have a few new songs, but one issue remains decided, Eric. So remains this undecided. 2.5 years since he left the band.
Yeah.
And Gwen is particularly adamant that he should be involved in the next record. Quote, because Eric is no doubt, she says. Oh, I think that what we are is that. And she points to some steamed vegetables on a dinner tray in front of her. And they're really good. And if I can put a little butter and salt and pepper on that, it would be fucking great. And that's what Eric is. Isn't that such a weird analogy? Or this low sort of self-esteem analogy? She's saying, after all this incredible success of Tragic Kingdom, we're just a plate of steamed vegetables on a dinner tray. And it'd be great if we put some butter and salt and pepper on those steamed vegetables.
Right.
And that's what I need from Eric.
Yeah.
No, you don't. How could you think that right now in this moment?
I mean, you look at more than half the songs on Tragic Kingdom, how
I think
him involved.
Just, yeah, that's true. And maybe it is part of his, how do I write a record without Eric?
That's what I'm saying. The expectation is, oh, shit, I don't have the fallback of, like, my brother, who's also on the hook for this.
Right, yeah.
Now it's just me.
Yeah, 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 right.
And Tony,
yeah,
who I broke up with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I guess.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I can imagine her being like, wait, are you sure you want to leave? I could use some backup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't
speak too together.
In this massive, you know... huge thing that I have to take on.
No, you're right. It's just fear of not having him around.
Understandable.
So, you know, Gwen does start contributing some vocals to other groups in this time. She's already started to dip into this a little bit.
Is Eve?
No. That's like 2000. And that's like after.
Oh, you're talking about before the album comes out. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're not even at 2000 yet.
Okay.
She contributed vocals to tracks for the Brian Setzer Orchestra, Prince.
Nice.
Prince, someone they'll work with, I think, on Rocksteady.
Hey,
Rocksteady.
Yeah.
Fishbone and Familyhood Nexperience. And she recorded a track for Bush, for Gavin.
Nice.
And sometime in between albums, they do this new song, New, for the movie soundtrack, Go.
Go? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I haven't seen Go in for fucking ever.
I've never seen it. I just remember New.
I remember it being a pretty like fun thing. So I didn't remember this song. My wife, when I was listening to Return to Saturn, was like, oh, I know this one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't.
I remember this coming out. I remember the video coming out and being like, ooh, this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it must have been a big deal. It's the first new No Doubt song since Tragic Kingdom.
And it was on a soundtrack.
Years.
I remember it. And the video is cool, too.
And it just makes sense listening to that record now. That definitely sounds a little more Tragic Kingdom-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
The chorus, for sure.
Even though I think a lot of these songs came about multiple times over the course of years or whatever. But yeah, there's this November 98 Rolling Stone article where they're basically just documenting, like, the things are not going great in No Doubt world. And, like, you know, they talk about how they got a new producer for this record. Now they, like, switch producers. It was originally this guy, Matthew Wilder, who was the original guy for Tragic Kingdom.
Right.
But they basically break up, and the group's like, we need to move on to a new producer. And they find the guy who did Mother's Milk and Super Unknown by Soundgarden.
Oh.
To produce it.
What's his name?
Mike Beinhorn.
Okay.
Michael Beinhorn. Yeah, they started working with him, and yeah, they said Beinhorn will forego a lengthy vacation to take the helm on the next No Doubt album. This is in 98.
Okay.
And so they're still going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
And I think there's just, you know, that syndrome, that sophomore slump syndrome where, like, they just get two in their head. They get obsessed, and they get two in their head, and they're just sitting around rewriting,
it's
writing,
so hard
rewriting.
For me to, as someone who's been in bands but has never worked with a quote-unquote producer, the idea that, like, we're going to stop what we're doing because this guy is not the guy is like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Do you not have the songs? Are you writing the songs with this person? And that's what I'm wondering, is, like, you know?
Yeah, I think,
is
you know,
it
they,
that much?
Yeah, I think they bring it in that, I think in that sort of dynamic of, like,
they're asking him to do
you
something.
You have millions and millions of dollars on the line.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, go to this guy, and they're going to make this shit better.
Right.
And they work with him, and they're like, you're not making it better.
Right.
You know, and like, if you're not making it better, we're going to find someone who does.
Yeah.
And you then have to restart the entire relationship. And so then there's another April 2000 Time article titled, Two Hit Wonders. Out of the spotlight for nearly 3 years, No Doubt returns to prove pop can grow older gracefully.
Whoa.
Already, it's like,
that's
Jesus,
quick.
Older gracefully. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That really speaks to the here then gone nature of that.
I just don't know where we fit in, says Stefani, contemplating the andro-fueled rock bands and teen pop charts that have muscled into No Doubt's territory. There should be enough room for everything, she says gloomily. But right now, those acts take up so much room.
It's true.
You know, so this is why they're like, how do we deal with Backstreet Boys and Blink 182 or whatever? You know, or,
not even Blink 182, Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Korn.
Andro-fueled rock bands and teen Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Korn, so Limp Bizkit, like those kind of bands. Stained, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, she just talks about after 2.5 years, she kind of went back and like went into like a weird sort of depression, kind of cloudy, confusing state for a couple years, didn't know what to do. She was probably, you know, Eric's not here anymore. I'm having trouble writing. I have so much pressure on me.
Yeah.
It sounds like a hard, intense time for the band.
Dude, I fucking bet.
Glenn Ballard gets brought in to get things moving. He's like he's the guy who did Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah.
He says, in any case, Dumont admits that initially he thought Ballard was too slick for the job. I won't pretend that there wasn't some pressure for them to write with me, says Ballard. Whatever it took to make sure they had a, quote, radio single. So they're just going back and forth between all these producers.
That's what I'm saying.
They bring in the Soundgarden guy. They bring in the Jagged Little Pill guy.
It's not great.
What's going to work? What's going to hit? We have to make sure we hit something as big as Don't Speak. And it's like, dude, you're not going to write something as big as Don't Speak.
Yeah.
Until the next record.
How many times going over it? It's not going to, you know, improve it. You know, at some point you're going to lose any sort of magic.
Right. The article ends with them saying, Return of Saturn has lyrics that are excessively vague, music that pushes the listener, though not too much, and singles primed to blare from a car stereo. It's not high art, but it's much more substantial than Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Okay.
On the standout Simple Kind of Life, Stefani mulls the crossroads of womanhood, and she does Bittersweet very well. Return of Saturn may not sell 15 million copies, but it proves No Doubt has much more than just 15 minutes. And so isn't it kind of strange that even right away, the weird expectation setting going on here, that the band is trying to push, or the label or their manager is trying to push, where it's like, you guys aren't going to like this one as much. So let's just admit that up front.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've listened to this record. You're not going to have as much fun. You're not as much of a good time. Whatever sort of nostalgia you're trying to pull from 1995 or 96, 99, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's set expectations in the press for how they're going to relate to Return of Saturn.
It's so interesting how fully industry this band became.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean.
No, but think about other bands.
We're about to. This is even before.
I know.
You know, yeah,
I know. But,
yeah.
but you know what I'm saying? Like this, where other bands, I'm just thinking of if you were another, like if Sublime, you know, this is maybe a bad comparison because they were on so many drugs, but like, you know, say Sublime's follow-up came out that many years later, I don't know that there'd be people like, you need to make a hit. I think like at some point it would just, and maybe it's...
It's because they were so big, I think.
Yeah, it was like, can you just, but like, you know, you think about like huge bands like Pearl Jam, and you know, like they didn't all have to
right
do that.
Yeah.
Do you know? And I'm wondering what is, how did that happen with No Doubt?
Yeah.
Is it Gwen Stefani? Like, is it that?
Yeah. I think there is some element of them placing this pressure upon themselves.
Yeah.
You know, where if they had just gone back into the studio and they're like, we're going to write our follow-up to Tragic Kingdom and like, maybe it's not going to be as good or maybe it's not going to sell as well, but like, we're in this for the long haul and like, you know, we want to get stuff out there.
Yeah.
Maybe they just remove some. I mean, this is what happens on the follow-up to Return of Saturn in different, and we'll talk about what happens there.
Yeah.
But
also, I wonder too, if maybe, you know, beyond even, you know, Gwen's kind of like anxiety about writing this or doing this, I wonder too, if just because of her being this attractive woman, did the industry people become like, oh, we need to shepherd this? I don't know.
Probably.
You know,
probably like, more so than Eddie Vedder got or something.
That's what I'm saying. Right. That's where I'm like, where I think about the other bands that did it, and I was like, oh, it's because they didn't feel like they had this like celebrity that they could like pump.
Sure. It was a, it had different stakes because of Gwen's magneticism and just being super hot and super famous, and you know, it comes with different expectations than, like you said, Eddie
Laid Vedder. On top of this super shaky foundation.
Right, exactly.
Right?
So that's a good, we've given the segue.
Yeah.
Let us talk about the clip that will summarize the area for which we just discussed. April 7th, 2000, they're on Conan O'Brien again, which Conan happily points out is they had him on as the No Doubt for their network television debut 4 years earlier, and now they're back.
Ladies and gentlemen, 4 years ago, my next guest made their network television debut on our show, and we are thrilled that they've come back tonight to premiere their brand new album, Return of Saturn, which hit stores this Tuesday. Please welcome No Doubt.
And they're going to be doing two songs, Alex, on April 7th, 2000.
Yes.
Which we see very rarely in the traditional late night setting.
It speaks to them being huge.
Exactly. This is a special Conan O'Brien moment.
Yeah.
We have No Doubt for their new record release. We're giving them two songs.
And strap in.
Right? I don't know. We saw this R.E.M. with Letterman did two songs, whatever.
Right.
But this era, we have not seen a band get two songs. So they're going to do Ex-Girlfriend first, which is the opener to Return to Saturn and the first single off the album. Right away, we're seeing some white fur-like thing covering the amps and the drum stage.
Uh-huh.
Tom is in some white leather pants with a white sleeveless collar shirt.
And the worst sunglasses of all time.
Are they sunglasses or are they like the Russell Westbrook glasses that have like nothing, there's like no lenses in them? I couldn't tell.
Like, they look like glasses you would wear to like prevent snow blindness. They're like super thin.
Yeah.
It's just,
I guess,
like,
I couldn't tell if there was even any lenses in there. Tom is going to go through a little fashion journey here for the next few clips.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Gwen now has pink hot hair, deep red lipstick.
I mean, she looks the most like, well, I guess Tony looked kind of normal, but you know. Tom's outfit is just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, what did you do, buddy?
And then Adrian. Sort of Abe Lincoln stove top pipe hat on.
Yeah.
And then,
like, kind of Cat in the Hat-ish.
Yeah. And then, so what is going on with his mouth on these clips?
He's just got, like, huge, big black lipstick smeared around his...
But it looks almost like a fake Halloween
That's
mouth.
What I'm saying. It's made to look scary.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't look scary, necessarily.
You're not intimidated by him?
No, I wasn't, like, shaking in my little booties when I saw Adrian today. It was more like, why are you looking like that?
I was just like, I can't tell. Are they supposed to have been like from the future?
The band overall? That's the theme.
Like, it has this very like.
Well, so like, what? Well, all right. If we are to connect the dots here.
Yeah.
Like, what would the white fur aesthetic supposed to imply?
I'm not sure.
Like,
I'm having a hard time with
because it's a whole stage setup across amps and the drum setup,
like the riser with the
Tom obviously has some white.
He's wearing all white
matching this, but
no one else is
doing that.
But the amps are white and they're fuzzy. They're like furry,
right? it's very, it's odd. And obviously then Bradley and McNair just look like themselves. They look totally
just
normal.
Hanging out, yeah.
Hanging out. Tony just has a sleeveless tank top on.
A missing person's shirt. Which is pretty nerdy.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about the song.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
So it's
a lot to take in when you see it at first, frankly.
So it's obviously much more like, it's darker, minor-y, right? We got some minor things going on here in a way that probably we didn't see on Tragic Kingdom too much.
I like this song. I mean,
yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It is good. I mean, Gwen seems like a much more confident singer here, though I think maybe this isn't as challenging as some of the other stuff we've watched her do so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I think the bridge is a good example where like this doesn't hit necessarily as hard as Tragic Kingdom era. No. It's a little lazier and like not as sort of like punchy and like you know exciting. I don't know.
Yeah, the production lets it down a little bit on the record, I think.
Okay. Well, here live it's also just sort of a little plotting and whatever. Yeah. But I do like the song. I think the song is good. I think Gwen is really good on it. I do like the little chugga chugga thing in the chorus.
Yep.
Like it's cool.
Hip hop influences are coming in.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like in a little bit of the production. They're like kind of at the beginning.
And then
this right here.
Sure.
Super low bass. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The bass actually might even be matched by the synth here, which is obviously what becomes their role.
But I mean,
thing.
Tony starts playing with a 5-string bass and just the super low bass notes.
Right. But yeah, I think I do like it. I think the chorus eventually it's like, all right, guys, let's wrap this up. Like by the end of it, I'm a little bored again.
This record, too long.
It's so long.
Oh my gosh!
Like, when I texted you, I was like, this is actually an hour.
I was trying to
It's an hour on like the original cut. It's not some like special version.
I was trying to like just sample through and I was like, man, these songs are all too long.
Yeah. No. And I don't know if it's because Tragic Kingdom is like 52 or something. Tragic Kingdom is pretty long also.
It's just so interesting to have so many producers involved and show up with a bloated record.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like
why? Like where was the strategy there to be like,
yeah,
let's just put out like 12 songs, 38 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
pick the good ones. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. I mean, the record I told you, I think for this record, I mean, because now we're going to watch a second song they're doing, but very closely. That record, to me, it's like, there's good stuff going on. The upfront singles are definitely pretty good for the most part.
Yeah.
That record is actively kind of like anti-fun. A lot of that record is just like, we are not having fun, guys.
Yeah.
Just so you know. And like, that was a lot of the vibe of the quotes around this record. They're like, we're here to prove ourselves. We're serious songwriters.
Right.
And it's like, ugh.
I didn't like, I mean, personally, I find it to be a little too all over the place. Like, I just don't know.
Oh, it definitely is.
And it's just them. I think it's just what happens with them now. Like,
well, now they're not a band anymore.
But. Well, sure. But like, you know, from here on out, their identity becomes real hard to pin down.
For sure.
Right?
So now we're watching them do Simple Kind of Life.
I did not realize I liked this song so much.
It's great.
I fucking love this song.
This is definitely the best song on the record.
I like really like this song.
Yeah. That's kind of like that chorus. It's sort
the
of
the chorus is so good.
It's so good, and it kind of has that.
It sounds like an '80s hit.
Yeah, '80s, and also like it's. I also wrote like a little like country western twang worked into it.
Yeah,
like the way that it kind of like has it. You could see like a country singer doing a cover of this with a drawl on
it,
and it would sound great. It just does have that sort of like very innate like Americana thing wrapped into like the new wave thing, and like. Obviously, there's no ska anymore.
Right.
We're done with ska, at least on this song.
Yeah.
But looking cool as hell here.
Yeah. Like his bass playing in that chorus is great.
So good.
The lyrics here are really what is interesting about this song to me.
So it's about her wanting to settle down with like, Gavin Rossdale, right?
No, it's just about her wanting a simple life of literally, she's just like, I want to be a wife. And she's like, I want to have a kid. Some days I dream for a mistake. And she says, the more selfish I am, the harder it becomes. I don't know. She's like, it's really interesting wrestling with
getting older.
Wanting that, right? And like, that was not a cool thing for a woman of her position to be doing.
Sure.
And she just came from being the, I'm just a girl, rebellious thing. And I think this is more in line with her personal expression. I think this is her coming into her own, like, wanting.
Totally,
you know what I mean?
I think that's a totally good take.
And it speaks to the Orange County-ness of it all, where she came from this, and it, you know, it doesn't mean that she's like a shitty conservative piece of shit or anything like that, but it just means
she could be, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but like, it's just interesting to see her singing very openly about that.
Sure.
In a compelling way. That line where I think you'd be a good dad. Sometimes I wish for a mistake of like, I want to be accidentally pregnant. Like, it's like,
yeah,
It's striking.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, tough to sing that in public and put it out there as like the big hit single.
Yeah.
This is the only hit single on the album.
Yeah. And the video has her in a wedding dress and stuff like that, if I remember correctly.
Like,
yeah.
This is the only one I think that cracks the top 100.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, the album debuts at number 2. It sells like 1.5 million records. It's, you know, it's not like they're like starving here.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's the kind of thing where like when this came out when I was 15, I don't think I cared about this record or, you know, or didn't hear it a lot. Like, it has been kind of lost to the history of time.
Yeah. And
this
record
overall has just kind of been lost to the history of time.
I think the production does not hold up very well. It's a little too late 90s.
Yeah, and also it makes sense because there's too many fucking cooks in the kitchen, right?
Like, totally, yeah.
It's just all over the place. And it's, yeah, I mean, like you said, there's like 11 different producers, right?
That to me, though, that single just feels like their kind of new wave ideal. They also cover, what's that? It's My Life?
Yeah.
They cover
it's
that,
My Life.
They cover that right around that time, too, I think, which is an incredible cover.
Yeah, that's a perfect No Doubt cover.
Exactly, right? Which this is what happens is their new wave side took over on this record. And then,
and then
who knows what takes over on the next
one? Well, let's get into it. So, I mean, like I said, the album was successful. New and Ex-Girlfriend reached the top 10 of the modern rock charts, but not the Hot 100. Simple Kind of Life peaked at number 38 on the Billboard Hot 100. So, you know, for them, a moderate big hit. For them, and that's being the only one. They were nominated for Best Rock Album at the 2001 Grammy Awards.
Okay.
But lost out to Foo Fighters, There's Nothing Left to Lose.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so, yeah, after Return to Saturn, they get right back to recording, which I think, good idea. So January 2001, they're doing some, like, movie soundtrack stuff, and this is when Gwen does Southside Moby.
Nice.
And Let Me Blow Your Mind.
Yeah.
Let Me Blow Your Mind.
Yeah.
By Eve. And it's funny, like, that Eve song is, like, the thing that sets off Gwen Stefani on the rest of her career.
Yeah.
And kind of defines No Doubt for the rest of their career is like that Eve song. Just interesting. Like, I'm sure when they did that, they probably weren't thinking this Eve
track. This is a one-off. Yeah.
Right. It was like, this will be fun. And like, it just sort of defines.
It'll be so unlike No Doubt.
That album absolutely defines what Rocksteady sounds like. It defines her solo career.
Yeah.
It just sets them off on a whole different path. So yeah, every night on tour to support this record, they basically talk about throwing these like after show parties.
Yeah.
They're like partying and dancing to like Jamaican dancehall music.
Dancehall.
Yep. Every night. Basically one night they're like, hey, we should like explore this when we record our next record. This could be a fun thing to idea, right?
Yeah.
Drawing inspiration from artists such as Bounty Killer, Cuddy Ranks, and Mr. Vegas, the band began to work on an album in January 2001 by creating beats on Pro Tools at guitarist Tom DeBott's cart. So they just start fucking around probably high on Pro Tools, being like, right? Like, I think it's just a funny way to think about
this.
Like,
is okay, yeah. So, I mean, this is like,
and wait, very quickly,
yeah.
So, to speak to what you were talking about before about the number of different studios and producers,
oh, yeah,
this record obviously they go to Jamaica.
I was gonna say, they definitely go to Jamaica, right?
So, I'll read this in a row: Los Angeles, London, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Jamaica, Port Angeo, Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, back to L.A., back to another studio in L.A., back to London, back to another studio in London, Chanhassen, Minnesota. I think
that's got to be Prince.
I think, yeah, you're right, it is Prince. That's exactly what it is. Then L.A., and then back to London again for this record.
So what the fuck, man? Recorded. How do you get anything done?
They also, it wasn't like they did this for 3 years. You know what I mean? Like, they recorded this album, relatively speaking, compared to Return to Saturn.
They must have been, like, touring.
Very quickly.
Right?
I don't know. I don't know if they were touring while they were going into these. Maybe that makes more sense.
Because it seems crazy to me. Like,
but yeah, so they go in and, you know, just some of these quotes for the way they start promoting it. It's a great, great return to form for the band, according to the mixer and producer. They work with Prince. They work with Nellie Hooper, Sly and Robbie. They work with Rick Ocasek.
Sly and Robbie, man. My favorites. And it bums me out.
And then, you know, they also work with Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics.
Yep, saw that.
At all.
Yeah.
They work with some people, William Orbit, who work with Madonna and Blur.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I think the way they were presenting this pretty quickly, there's actually this quote from one of her agents, another A&R guy, their A&R man, Mark Williams, the, you know, the height of credibility, the A&R man.
Yeah.
I think this record naturally perfectly continues down the path that was started with those tracks, referring to Moby and Eve. I think that what people liked about those songs, they'll find here. Plus another whole side to her that is her and No Doubt. One they might not be familiar with, but I think they will enjoy. Speaking about No Doubt that they're not familiar with, not Eve and Moby. And so,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that was a crazy sort of, like, primer for their A&R guy to say for this record, being like,
yeah,
like, this target audience is, like, you know, the Hot 100,
totally,
like, you know, Hot Jams, like 98.5 or whatever.
Yeah.
94.5 here in Boston. That, like, everyone discovered Gwen Stefani through, and, like, what you gonna do next? And it's like,
right,
these people are gonna love this record.
Oh, so that really sounds,
and like, all the other No Doubt stuff, they might kind of enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. No. And it sounds like, also, it's like, you can just say it's a soft launch for her solo career.
Right.
Like, I mean, well, clearly want to say
they
that.
Couldn't.
No, I know. But do you know what I mean? That's so obviously.
Yeah. And it is obvious in the music, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were excited, right? Like, I'm confident people are going to love it just because it's so simple and it's so easy. This is what Gwen said. It's just fun and upbeat, and it doesn't have anything to it. It doesn't have anything to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not too much work, and I think people need that sometimes in music. And so,
Should I
just share my conflicted feelings on this before we watch the clip, or should we talk about it while we watch? Let's talk while we watch the clip.
Yeah.
So December 15th, 2001, we're back on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
We are back in the immediate post-SNL era of Saturday Night Live. We had Sum 41 do the second episode of this season.
Oh, yes, yes,
immediately,
yes,
after 9/11. And now this is the last episode of 2001 on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
Ends with Rudy Giuliani again.
Mm.
Can't get away from Rudy Giuliani on Saturday Night Live in
really
December
cannot.
2001. And they're going to do two songs. They're going to do Hey Baby and Hella Good.
Yes.
Right away, we're going to, the names of these songs, Hey Baby and Hella Good.
Yeah.
You know, just even the names.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't get much more reductive and simple and not much to it than Hey Baby and Hella Good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, right after Ellen DeGeneres intros them.
Looking not happy.
No, she's like, Ladies and gentlemen, No Doubt, yeah, these fuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, No Doubt.
Right after the intro, it's like, bam. Big synth, yeah, noises. Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Like, it's just, like, in your face, like, immediately. And
it is just so much for the eyes to process.
I mean, Tom right away, dude.
What is Tom's hair?
This is what I wrote down. Messy, bleach blonde hair with a regular, messy, unbleached beard.
Yeah.
A Christmas sweater vest with a collar shirt, baggy jeans,
and a
guitar.
Like, what?
Like, I need, like, an action figure version of Tom DeMonte from this performance. I want to, like, hang it up on my, like, little mantle at home. I want to see Tom DeMonte every day dressed like this.
Yeah, it's like a comedy sketch.
It is the most ridiculous-looking thing.
And Adrian on the drums with a huge mohawk and, like, a bedazzled headset.
Yes.
Yeah,
and we have three backup singers now. We have Gwen kind of in, like, straight-up Eve pop star mode, right? Like,
yes.
You know, the hat. It's kind of, once again, like, I don't know. I did think of Eve when I saw her. It's like,
yeah,
she looks like she's trying to look kind of hip hop ish. It's not very Jamaican. Like, I don't know. Like,
it is. Well, you mean her look?
Her look, yeah.
Well, she's got the colors.
Sure. Yeah, she does have the colors. You're right.
But, oh, God. I mean, I just wrote, this is embarrassing to look at.
Yeah.
I think the song sounds better on record. The visual makes it very hard for me to process.
Why do you think it sounds better on record?
Because I can't see them. I don't know. Like, there's something about that, the way they're, this is like, how do you do there, fellow kids?
Yeah.
Like, that just, it has that feeling to me.
Tony, like, air humping. He's doing this, like, crab walk air humping thing.
Yeah.
Throughout the song, he's, like, kind of, like, humping on an upright crab walk. And so then Steven and Gabriel come down and do, like,
the bounty hunter part.
They sound, actually, I kind of prefer their versions of bounty hunter.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both not great, but I mean, good for them that they get to do this, and it sounds kind of cool, I guess.
And then they, like, grind with Gwen.
Yeah.
Which just feels real strange to me.
Yeah, they're like brother and sister, dude. Like, they're like longtime friends.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. She's just trying to be sexy, I guess.
Well, it's a dance song, right? And they're dancing. And it's so strange to see a band that's all about, like, in the past, you know, loud guitars and, like, being a rock band. And this is very much like a dance band.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the whole thing. We want to hear our songs in clubs.
Right.
This is all the quotes from them around this era.
Right.
We wanted to walk into the club and hear our music. It's like, okay. Like, I mean, you did it.
Yeah.
They definitely did it.
They did.
So this is my conflicted thing around this is like, okay, look, like this chorus is dumb as fuck and like it's bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm not trying to, there are people who love it and it's fine. It's just not for me. It's fine. But like, there is part of me where I listen to this record and I'm like, you have to give them credit.
That's the thing.
For going into that recording session after that album that was like a minor flop and being like, we have an intention behind it. We are going to do this specific thing.
Yeah.
And like, we are going to go for this specific style and we are going to do it really, really well to the point where it's going to hit hard.
Yeah.
You have to give them credit for that.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think it's just outwardly terrible, but I do not like it.
Neither do I, but I still.
But you're right. They said what they were going to do, and they did it.
Totally. They did it, and to the point where like that song's a massive hit. The next song we're going to talk about is a massive hit, and then the biggest hit isn't even being done on Saturday Night Live tonight.
Oh, Hey Baby was produced by Sly and Robbie. Fascinating.
Yeah,
I don't know if people know who Sly and Robbie are, but Sly and Robbie are a rhythm section that played on tons of dub records in Jamaica. They're in the Revolutionaries, who are backing band for like tons and tons and tons of records. They also backed Grace Jones for a couple records in the 80s, but some of my favorite producers. But they have a lot of really kind of what I think is disposable dance hall that they were cranking out for years and years.
Right,
and that's what it sounds like.
And that's clearly the stuff that they love.
Very digital, you know, sounds.
It debuted at number six on 36.
I mean, they got the right people. They got Sly and Robbie, man. Like, they got the right people. And they got a couple other producers who were, like, big dancehall people.
Yeah.
I do actually really like the song that, what's his name, from the Eurythmics wrote with them. That's the one that I think pulls off the best.
Underneath It All?
Underneath It All. Pulls off the best reggae.
I guess I should share my first dance wedding song.
Oh, yeah.
Underneath It All.
Yeah. It's a great fucking song.
It was literally... because I looked at like the list of band like songs the band could play, and I was like, "This is the only one I don't hate. Let's dance to this."
But
it still is a very nice wedding song.
I think it's a great song. I think that to me sounds like, oh yeah, Sly and Robbie's arrived on this record,
and that is the biggest hit on the record.
Yeah,
it's the only one I think hits number two on the bill. And the other, I think this one hit like three or five or something like that.
Yeah, because the other two sounded, I mean, not sounded. The other two felt big.
Right, for sure. They all feel big. But Underneath It All didn't feel as big to me.
Yeah, it's surprising.
And it was technically Billboard-wise. So let's talk about the second song they do, which is called Hella Good. Hella, we're back on our Hella phase after Rancid.
Yeah.
Of course, Southern California. Ellen DeGeneres, once again, fucking No Doubt, I hate them and I hate all of you.
Totally.
The backup singers are still here, but we do have sort of a big wardrobe change now from the whole band. Hey Baby really got the goofy as hell wardrobe treatment. And now it's a little more palatable.
We seem to be on planet Earth.
Tom still looks ridiculous with the hair.
I don't know what is going on.
At least the outfit is a little... He doesn't have a keytar anymore. Gwen looks a little more like, oh, this is how I think of Gwen Stefani, right? Like,
she's very pop singer.
Yeah. But it's still not... I don't know. It's not outside the bounds of what I think of when I think of Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
The way the last clip was a little like, you look very silly.
Yeah.
And this one, it kind of like, oh, you look silly, but you also look like Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
Tom's got his guitar back. No more keytar. Not doing much on this one for Tom. Doing the little bap-a-dap-a-dap-bap.
Yeah, I said he looks bored as hell. I get it. Plus, your hair looks terrible. I was like, yeah.
But once again, the synth is just driving the entire thing.
Totally.
You don't need the guitar here. You barely even need the guitar.
Yeah. Also, the backup singers aren't doing much.
Yeah, and this, so they're just doing the chorus?
I don't know.
Maybe they're just doing the chorus part. By the way, what's what I wrote? Is this even a good like club dance hall song? Like, did people in clubs like get down to this? Hey Baby, Hey, I can totally understand.
Well, I mean, so...
this one is like... ugh.
You don't produce this.
Yeah,
the Neptunes.
Right. Which, yeah, I understand that.
Hitmakers du jour at the moment, right?
Is it not a Gary Good Neptunes beat, dude? Like, I don't know.
Well, it's way more NERD than it is Neptunes.
Yeah, it's just not, I don't know. I wasn't dancing in clubs in 2001, but I don't know. I feel this will come on. People are like, all right, fine. Hey, maybe Hate makes way more sense to me for that. Yeah, and then there's this little part where they get a weird quick solo riff from Tom. And a response from the synth, they like trade off licks a little bit. Totally does not fit in the song, like at all. It's very weird. Tom and Tony jumping during the chorus is kind of funny.
I will say Tony is the only person who seems to like. Tony seems very like on board with this sound. He looks definitely in his place.
Yeah, you know? No, and there's a lot of, like I said, there's quotes from this record came out where he was like, I'm loving this shit. I'm having such a good time.
Yeah. So.
Right, and I think Tom and Adrian are a little like, let's make some money.
Yeah, certainly Tom.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
Can you imagine the journey that Tom Dumont has gone on?
What should I do here, guys? Point?
Like the 89 hair metal dude.
Hey, so like, what do you guys want me to do? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, hey, so this Neptune song is pretty good, but what do you want me to do?
So Tom, can you just go like this? Bam, ba, dam, ba, dam, bam. Oh yeah, hold on. Let me play around with that. Yeah, I think I got it.
Yeah. We're going to need you to get a terrible haircut.
And just play this very quick riff over and over again. There's a moment here where Adrian stands up on his drum seat.
Yes. It's the break at the end, I think.
Yeah. He does like this hip dance.
He
starts dancing on the drum seat, like with little like hip moves over the breakdown. Here it comes. He's in like a skirt and he stands up on it with this mohawk. And is like doing a little hula hoop type hip dance over it. Okay.
Sure.
It was kind of funny. He slaps his ass a few times when he does it.
I mean, at the end here, it hits, I guess.
I just can't get down with this chorus. It's like the atonal nature of it. It's just kind of like, ugh. It's just sort of like plodding and like, I don't know. It's just not for me. There are songs in this record that I enjoyed. It's not a total, like, I'm not here to shit on this record entirely. Yeah. I'm not. Like you said, the Underneath It All is really good.
Yep.
The Rick Ocasek tracks, not to be the stereotypical white guy who only likes the Rick Ocasek songs, but like both of those are quite good.
Yeah. I saw there was a song called Waiting Room and I was like, no fucking way do they cover Fugazi.
It's not.
They did not.
No. it's just, look, this record's not for us, but they did a really impressive job of coming out of Return to Saturn and doing this. And having a whole stage design and a whole vision for it.
It extended their career for sure.
It makes Gwen Stefani's entire career at this point.
Yeah.
This album creates her solo career.
Totally.
Right? Which, should we talk quickly about her solo career now before the final clip? Or do you want
to? Yes.
Okay. Because timeline-wise, we would talk about it after.
But I guess, really?
Yeah, because the
Super Bowl is 2003.
Yeah.
And right. Their first record is 2004.
Yeah. But yeah, we can quickly talk about her solo.
Not for me.
No. I mean, like, I didn't even realize the second album had that song, like Sweet Escape, which was, you know, huge. Like you hear that on like basketball games and stuff.
I
didn't even realize that was Gwen Stefani.
The records are huge.
I did not even realize that
one
was
of those
Gwen
records
Stefani.
Has sold like an amazing amount of copies.
Well, obviously, Holla Back Girl, one of the biggest songs of the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough because I don't want to hate on it. Just because of what it is, but it's like it just all gets kind of embarrassing and like a lot of,
yeah,
you know, and particularly as she gets older, there was that phase where she was getting older, but her music was getting like much younger sounding and it just like was strange. Although it's not all bad.
No, it's just more like it's just so nakedly radio hit vibes that you can't, it's nothing that interesting to it, and it just becomes mainstream hit radio. I mean, Holla Back Girl, like, I understand the fun behind that.
I understand why that was a hit.
Absolutely. And, like, you know, Rich Girl, I listened to that, and I was like, sure, like, this is fine radio fodder.
Right.
Produced by Dr. Dre on that one. And then, obviously, this also gets into, like, the Harajuku, like, problematic shit that she, like, recently defended.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that quote where she was like, I am Japanese?
Yeah, I was like, no, Gwen.
Yeah, I was like, why did you say that? And it was so funny, you read that like transcript, she's like, what, I am? And the journalists are like, no, you're not.
You're really not getting
like
what we're
Irish
trying to...
Or some
we're
shit.
Really not. You're really not getting what we're trying to talk to you about.
Yeah, not to jump like 19 years into the future. But yeah, all that shit, we're just... But that, I mean, look, the Japanese culture appropriation stuff, the Jamaican cultural appropriation stuff, the Indian cultural appropriation stuff. It's not like there isn't a little bit of a track record going on here, which I don't know why. Is it just because the OC is the whitest place in the world, so the last thing you want to be is like white and from the OC?
I think she's just clunky in her like cultural literacy.
Yeah.
You know, and even when questioned about it, it's like, what? You know, which...
Yeah, I am Japanese.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's the problem.
Look, the problem is that you are not Japanese. This is the whole problem with you.
Yeah.
That you're not Japanese.
But also, that first record, 8 million copies.
Yeah. Hollaback Girl was like, she won like 5 Grammys or something. Yeah. Like, it's so... You know, it was like, it's just crazy.
Made her a megastar.
Rocksteady, just, you know, it set her up for that entire, the rest of the 2000s. Literally to today. Was the Rocksteady did that in a lot of ways, you know? Because then, you know, she becomes more comfortable working with these different types of producers, and it becomes a very producer-driven music, like all radio, and, you know, it just sets her up in that way.
Totally.
Okay, so I say it's time to end the show, and with one more clip, Alex, from January 26, 2003.
Yeah.
And you know what? It is a landmark moment for our podcast. Yes. Because we are talking about the ultimate musical guest opportunity in American culture, Alex, in a lot of ways.
Mm.
We are talking about the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah.
It's finally happened. Spoiler, we are going to talk about the Super Bowl halftime show 2 weeks from now in our next episode, which I did not even plan to happen.
Yeah.
But we're talking about two bands of which I could
We just
play
love it so
the
much.
The Super Bowl halftime show. And yes, they're playing Super Bowl 37 between the Raiders and the Buccaneers. And it's funny, not only is that Super Bowl incredibly unmemorable, like the Buccaneers like blew them out.
Right.
This is in between two of the most famous Super Bowl halftime performances of all time, in a way that makes this one also incredibly unmemorable. The one before...
Was Springsteen?
U2.
Oh, okay.
Doing the 9/11 thing.
Oh, yeah.
The very, very good, like, big, incredible performance. And then the next one is Janet Jackson.
Oh.
And it's sandwiched in between these two.
Wow.
In a way that, like, no one probably remembers them doing Just a Girl and Message in a Bottle.
There are other reasons why they might not remember it.
Yeah. I would think so. So let's start the clip here.
And now, the NFL and 10 Planet Productions are proud to present live performances from Shania Twain, No Doubt, and Sting. This is the AT&T Wireless Super Bowl 37 Halftime Show.
Let's go for it!
You know, first off, Alex, we don't necessarily have to watch all of this performance, but we're going to talk about it. Shania Twain kicks things off here. You know, she's going to do the first 6.5 minutes or so. And right away, let's go, football fans!
Does she say that?
Yes, that's the first thing she says. Let's go, football fans.
Because she is definitely lip syncing in this.
Well, let's talk about it. So just right away, Shania is singing Man, I Feel Like a Woman. I'll know this song. And it is so obviously lip synced.
So obvious.
One of the most obvious lip sync performances I've ever seen.
It's hard to look at.
Like, it's hard to look at. The vocal recording. So what they do in these things usually is they will give some element of fresh vocals in the mix to give you the element in your brain that tricks you into thinking that maybe it's live.
Yeah.
There is no live mix. It is straight up sounds like an overproduced tinny vocal track from 2000s era Shania Twain.
Yeah.
It is just, there's nothing else to it.
And she's so clearly just singing along like no microphone on.
Right. Like, and so why, this is the other thing, she doesn't do a lot in this. She's not moving.
She's
a lot.
Good singer. What
are you doing? First of all, she's a good singer. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Secondly, if you're going to lip sync, have her do some stage theatrics.
Yeah.
Like, do some shit. That's what you do with the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If you're going to have someone lip sync, then you can do crazy dances. You can have crazy pyrotechnics, like whatever.
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything. She stands like she would be if she was singing.
I mean, I would say there's not much stage production at all for this whole thing.
It's one of the least underproduced Super Bowl halftime shows I've ever seen.
Yeah. And like, that's what I said to you.
I know. You texted me and you're like, oh, it's 2003. Like, I forgot. It was a while. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think you could watch Janet Jackson the next year with Justin Timberlake. A bunch of crazy shit going on.
Yeah. I was just like, why does this look so bad? You know, like, why is this production so bad?
And I think she doesn't even look particularly comfortable lip syncing.
Yeah.
I don't think she likes lip syncing.
It could also be that things have just really taken off in production levels since.
In how you can...
In what people are expected, you
for
know.
The stage show, you mean?
Yeah, stage show.
I just said to you, I don't think, I think maybe a little bit, but I also think this is just like,
it's also
they,
just bad.
I don't think they tried very hard.
Yeah,
this year. I mean, they have, she has a backing band. Like, there's a guitar. We got another guitar, second guitar of the day for us. I think the first.
Oh, you know what?
I think
the violin player throws his violin into the crowd at some point, which I enjoyed.
Does the guy come back and like play a riff? No.
Do you see the guy on the right? Oh, there it is.
Yeah, what the fuck? He just threw the violin.
They both
there.
Just threw their instruments into the crowd.
I wonder why he did that.
I think it's because they play something different in the next song.
Oh, they do. They're like, you're right. Yeah, I don't need the violin anymore. Yeah, that she goes into this like second, this new single, which apparently is a big hit. Did you know this song?
Didn't ring a bell.
Yeah, me neither. Apparently it's a pretty massive hit for Shania Twain. It's called Up, but I didn't recognize it at all. Yeah, pretty weird, lifeless cuts into the crowd. It like cuts like live shots of people like watching her and like, you know, surrounding the stage.
They really did her dirty in this. It's like,
it
is just not good.
Like, what the fuck? We got another double guitar.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Like, how much is he really playing 12 string on this?
But like, the biggest move we get is like a lineup shot of her and the band. Like, they all stand in a line together. Yeah. Like, they don't do anything for Shania Twain on this. Like, what the fuck, man? They fuck Shania Twain.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually she gets risen over the crowd by a crane. This is the big thing that happens. Oh, this is the thing. So she walks into the crowd at like 4:20, and this is where she's like literally saying like hello to the crowd, and like her lips are not moving at all. It's like so obvious, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, then she gets lifted up by like a crane to end the song. Like, you know, the crane that they would use, like, to fix, like, a light post on the street, kind of. There's, like, nothing to it.
Yeah. They, like, had this crane from, like, setting some shit up earlier.
Literally,
in the day.
It looks
they were like, oh, this would be cool.
Yeah,
put her on this.
It literally does look like a stage setup.
Yeah,
crane.
Yeah, put her on that.
There's, like, nothing cool about this. It goes super slow. This is the other thing I said to you. This is in the daylight.
Yeah.
And you don't see a lot of Super Bowl halftime performances in the daylight.
Lighting can go a long way.
Dude, yeah. I think it's a big thing that kind of fucked them on this.
Yeah.
Was because you're in the daylight, usually it's either at night outside or it's in a dome.
Yeah.
You can totally control the lighting scheme and have a big lighting show. You know, that's what the Super Bowl does.
Feels a little bit like you're watching the State Fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they can't do anything cool
with
light because they're in broad daylight at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that kind of fucked them. But yeah. Just, I mean, man, I felt bad for Shania Twain. This was like terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what happened, but let's talk about No Doubt. So they have this pretty awkward transition. Shania Twain just ends the song on the crane.
Still up on the crane.
Hanging out on the crane. And the song ends. We don't see where Shania Twain goes. And we just cuts to doo 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 down, doo down, doo down. And we hear the riff from Just a Girl.
Yeah.
Gwen is doing like push-ups. Looking pretty traditional Gwen Stefani.
She's
now.
Like an old school Gwen.
Looking like old school Gwen. And I guess my first question for you here is, why are they doing Just a Girl in 2003 at this performance? Like, they just had this massive record with these big fucking hits.
But I think this is still a hit that it goes more universally.
I disagree. I don't think it does. Just a Girl wasn't even the biggest hit on Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah.
And so,
in
not
terms
only,
of sales, but I think when they do, whenever, I don't know. If,
I don't know. I think this is like a weird fucking choice. And not only is it a weird choice that they do Just a Girl as opposed to like Hey Baby Hey or Hella Good or Underneath It All, whatever.
Yeah.
Is like, they do the whole song almost. This is the other thing I had to say. Like, Super Bowls now, it's like, they do all
do
these medleys.
Yeah.
They're doing whole songs. Like, they're getting like 3 minutes of Just a Girl. It's like, go into Hella Good or Hey Baby Hey. Like,
I think now we're just used to the like crazy stage show medley shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know. I'm literally after
like, what did Tom Petty
do? I'm going
do?
To look up the other.
Tom Petty just played.
Dude, fucking like, I don't know. Prince probably did a crazy medley.
Springsteen just played, I think.
I'm telling you, people did more. We'll look it up, but I feel like people did more songs than just this usually.
Yeah. They sound good, by the way. Her vocals do not sound good, but like her...
Dude, she sounds bad.
Yeah, she sounds bad. She sounds out of breath like right away.
Yeah. I wrote Gwen struggling, all caps.
Like right away.
I just say, I'm just a girl at the Super Bowl, which I thought was fun.
I laughed at that. Yeah. I wrote that down.
And then, she like, we finally get some like generic looking cheerleader backup dancers, like some stage production going on. And Adrian still has his mouth makeup on.
Yeah.
But Gwen is just like out of breath the entire time and like can't really.
She loses her at the beginning and then she can't get it back.
Yeah. She just totally can't get it back.
These like punk cheerleaders.
Yes. This is the only stage production we get.
Yeah.
These like 10 like punk cheerleaders, which like don't even do much.
Yeah.
They're just sort of there doing generic cheerleader shit. I mean, look, the band does sound good. Tom sounds great. The guitar sounds great.
Yep.
But, once again, the Super Bowl did not do really big favors to No Doubt on this one.
I wrote, I'm just a girl at the Super Bowl. That's all I'll ever be, is a pretty funny new version of that lyric.
It was funny. And then we're going to, that song ends, and we're going to scan over to Sting. From, Sting? From the
I
Police?
I do know Sting.
The singer Sting?
Yes.
In a half red, half yellow cut together t-shirt. Not sure what's going on with this t-shirt. But yeah, Sting sounded good.
Sounded great. Dude's a pro.
Sting sounds great, dude.
Knows what he's doing.
Like, Sting is like, especially compared to what Shania Twain lip-syncing just did, and Gwen just did.
He just belts it.
Sting is like, whoa, I can feel the guttural things going on. Yeah. Like, you are singing, dude.
Yeah.
And they do Message in a Bottle.
Yep. Which, by the way, I think, No Doubt is a good band to back up. They're very Police-like in some moments.
Totally. Message in a Bottle is a good fit for them.
Yeah.
But once again, we're going to do all of Message in a Bottle?
Yeah.
Do some other fucking Police song or something. Yeah. Like, we don't need to see all of Message in a Bottle at the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. But it's like a good song for Tom and Tony. They both sound really good on this.
Yeah, Adrian, too. He pulls off the...
Gwen's going to come back for verse two. And Gwen gets verse two.
Doesn't sound great.
No. It doesn't sound great.
Doesn't sound great.
A little bit better than Just a Girl, maybe. But yeah.
I mean, the problems really come together when she has to sing with Sting.
Like at the same time, you mean?
Yes.
How would you, what was your reaction to that?
I was like, did they practice together?
Yeah.
I think he's like, ooh, it's worse if I try to match her. So I'm going to let her sing lines and then I'm going to like ad lib my little like Sting-isms.
Really? Does he do that?
I think at some point that this one.
Oh, like he starts like vamping a little bit.
Yeah, when he's like, I'm just going to let you sing these lines because when we sing together, it's like we're not singing.
Yeah. There's this very bland flashing SOS on the stadium screen that speaks once again. I'll try to pull it up for you, but like there's just this moment where like on the back of the stadium screen, you just see SOS in like black letters.
Yeah.
SOS, and you're like, why? It just speaks to the lack of histrionics for the Super Bowl.
It's on the Jumbotron.
This is the best you could do. Flashing SOS in like black and white letters. Yeah, they end with a fireworks show that's like pretty good, I guess. This is the thing they spent money on was the fireworks show. But no Shania Twain curtain call. I'm not clapping for Shania Twain here. She doesn't come back on stage. She doesn't sing with them at all.
No.
Shania Twain, this is what I wrote down. Like Poochie, Shania Twain died on the way back home to her home planet. She's just gone. I mean, Shania Twain is gone.
I will say, I do really like Adrian's drum set, where each drum is a different primary color.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like blue, yellow, red, green, every drum. Oh, that was cool.
But I felt bad. This is our first Super Bowl clip. It like sucked.
It sucks. Yeah, it's not a good Super. I mean,
I even think that what we're going to talk about in 2 weeks for a band that we were not going to particularly enjoy most of the episode. Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
I even think even them probably gave a much better halftime show performance.
Yeah,
but this was it was kind of funny. It's just once again we're ending, going from local cable access to the Super Bowl. It's incredibly impressive. It's a cool story. It's a fun little narrative to go on, but the clip itself was just like, ugh.
Oof.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
And they haven't done. Wait, do they have another album? Right.
So
yeah.
So let's quickly. We need to stop. We need to end the show. So and we have a whole little
push and shove.
We have a whole little segment to go through. But
push and shove,
So basically, this comes out. Then Gwen does all her solo stuff, which we already talked about. And then eventually, the rest of the band is like, we're starting to write more, and like Gwen's having a second kid, and it's taking a while, but we're gonna do it. We're gonna come back and put out a new album. And they go on tour in 2009 with Paramore, Janelle Monáe, Katy Perry, Panic at the Disco.
Damn.
All while finishing that record. And then June 11, 2012, they come out with Push and Shove. It did, at this point in 2012, Billboard and it's all kind of fake anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was going to say, between their last record and this one, the entire music industry has
collapsed.
Collapsed, yeah.
But it did peak at Settled Down, the first single, did peak at number 3 on the Hot 100. It was a big hit. I did listen to a little bit of that record. It was like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I don't want to totally dismiss it. I think there were moments I listened to it and I was like, you know, they're trying. And there's some, like, real songwriting here. And it's not just...
it's not just sound.
It's not just sound or overproduced stuff. Yeah. Like, they're really... They are trying to write some songs. But, like, you know, anyone out there, if you haven't listened to Push and Shove, like, you don't need to. It's fine.
Right.
And yeah, and then they basically never got back together again.
Yeah, and who knows what those other guys are doing. I mean, Gwen clearly has become like a massive celebrity in her own right.
We're going to talk about that a little bit in our segment today.
Ooh, fun. Host of The Voice.
But yeah, no, the rest, even I saw a quote from Adrian recently that was like, hey, it'd be nice to get back together. I saw, you know, like Blink-182 get back together and to feel that energy from the band and like from the fans, I mean.
Oh, he said that. That's
yes. He'd be like, oh, it'd be cool to feel that energy again. I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah.
You know, but it'd be cool.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Gwen seems to not be there.
No, not at all. I mean, she's just like, you know, why would you bother when you're like this massive TV star making millions and millions of dollars? And
if you wanted to be, play some shows with your band, but.
But I don't think she does.
Yeah.
So yeah, what we're going to do today for our final segment, Alex, any final thoughts on No Doubt?
No, I mean, I think Tragic Kingdom is a classic.
Yes.
And
unequivocally.
Everything after that really was hard for me to digest, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, I think Return of Saturn definitely has its moments.
Oh, for sure.
And then I respect the ingenuity and approach of Rocksteady.
Yeah.
Even if, like, I will never listen to that again. I just did it because we're doing this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd really like to see those three guys do something else.
Yeah. I think they might have,
you know,
might have written
or
with
any
someone.
Of them. Has,
they might
like,
have. I think Tony produced.
I would imagine. Tony seems like the kind of guy who like could get.
Tony worked with Pink at some point.
That would make sense, actually. Pink, I mean, that.
But.
Hey, if Tim Armstrong from Rancid can do it.
Yeah, right. Tom, I think, had some little side thing he tried to get off the ground and never did. Yeah, I think Tony's just kind of like a music mogul in the scene, producer,
right?
Who helps write songs.
Oh, Dream Car.
That's Tom. Right, no, that's the three of them with...
with Davey Havoc from AFI.
Yes.
Forgot about that.
Yes. But that was like
2017.
17, okay. Did you ever listen to it or hear it?
I must have.
Okay.
And he also played with Danny Elfman on some of his like Nightmare Before Christmas stuff when he was doing live shows.
Got it.
Wow, December 2018, Canal played bass for The Offspring on their Australian Festival headline tour.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I think he kept playing with them a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, so they're around. Tony definitely is just like, you know, you call. I'm sure a lot of people call up Tony and would love to play with Tony. You know what I mean? Like he's not having a problem. But yeah. All right, should we get into the final?
Let's do it.
Final segment of the day. We talked about No Doubt. We did it. And to end the show, we were going to do a segment called Only the Voice, Alex.
Oh boy. Okay.
Only the Voice. And so, as you had referenced, Gwen Stefani is sort of an on-again, off-again member of this television show called The Voice.
Yeah.
You ever watch The Voice, Alex?
Once or twice.
I don't think I've ever seen it, but I've seen a million ads for it whenever I watch Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
It's about the only thing I know about it. I know how the show works.
Heavily advertised.
You know, there's coaches, and they like people blind audition, and then they're like, hey, you.
Spin.
I want to pick you. And then they like coach them or shit.
I choose you.
Big hit. Big popular show.
Yeah.
And then Gwen Stefani met her now husband, Blake Shelton, on that show.
Yes.
So, we've talked enough about the TV show The Voice. Let's play Only the Voice, Alex.
How do I play Only the Voice, John?
So, what I've done today is I've pulled a few clips, YouTube clips of songs.
Ah, okay.
But what I have is they've isolated just the vocal track.
Okay.
And so, what I'm going to have you do, Alex, is I want you... The best you can, I'll play a few seconds of this vocal track, and I want you to name, as best you can, of some combination of these, the singer, the band, and the song.
Okay.
And so, you know, what I've done is, you know, these are all very famous songs,
okay,
for the most part. And so what I've done is tried to pick moments where, like, I'm not going to play you the chorus, right? Because you would instantly recognize that song.
Sure.
Right? So I'm trying to pick moments that'll be, like, a little tricky for you.
Interesting.
And so... most of these are bands. Some of them are artists. Actually, I think, you know what? Okay. Most of them are bands. There are a couple just singers, but yeah. So band, singer, song, you know,
band, singer, song,
band, singer, song. We'll see if you can do it. Ready? Ready for the first one?
I'm ready for it. I think.
Okay.
Wait. Okay.
Here we go. Clip number one.
Okay, it's Robert Plant, Led Zeppelin.
The song?
Whole Lot of Love.
3 for 3 on the first one. Alex Beaton. Off to a great start on Only the Voice. I'm worried this might be a little too easy.
I don't know.
I mean, you
could just be way too smart.
Yeah, well, this is the challenge I face on a daily basis being your friend. Ready for number two?
I think so, yeah.
I know about this score.
Okay.
Singer?
Yep, so it's... It's Van Halen.
Yes.
It's, oh my God, why can't... Oh my God.
The singer for Van Halen.
Why can't I think of this... David Lee Roth. There we go.
There you go.
And Hot for Teacher.
Hot for Teacher. Wow.
Okay.
Oh, God. I'm getting like bitch so far. Oh, boy. All right. Number three.
Yeah. You let me down when I look around. Madonna.
Yes. Mm. Madonna, the song.
Borderline.
God damn it. That's it. That's all you need to give back.
Yeah.
Madonna, Borderline.
Okay. Yeah.
Fuck. Are you going to get all of these?
I don't know, man.
This is becoming really embarrassing for me. I thought this was going to be harder, and now you're fucking killing it.
I mean, the Madonna one is, I just really like, that's not, Borderline's a really
good
song.
Well, I didn't know you liked Borderline so much. all right, the next one. Maybe you won't know this song, so it'll help. But I got tired of waiting.
Taylor Swift.
Fuck, yes.
I don't know the song.
Okay, thank God. You got one wrong, finally.
I don't know the song. Wondering if you were ever coming around. My faith in you was fading. I just don't know. I don't know.
It's called Love Story.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know.
Wow. Too Swift the enough. Swifties are going to be up in arms.
I know they will.
For
it's
not
fine.
Knowing Love Story. Hey, you got Taylor Swift itself. Ugh, now you're definitely going to get this.
Don't dox me. I cry. Oh, yeah. What? Okay, so Serge Tankian, System of a Down.
The song?
Chop Suey.
God damn it. All right. We only have 4 left.
Okay.
To have a perfect run on Only the
Not
Voice.
Perfect. I didn't get.
Oh, you didn't have Full Story. But still, you got Taylor Swift the singer. You that's close enough. All right. You're not going to know this song, so it's fine. But you might get the singer. It's not always rainbows
and butterflies. It's compromise. All right. So it's Maroon 5. It's Adam Levine.
The song? Moves us
along. Yeah. It's not This Love. My heart is full and my is it This Love?
You have a word right. You come at a time you
were. Something in Love.
She Will Be Loved.
She Will Be Loved. Okay.
Close. I'm going to give it to you.
Okay.
I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah.
Still impressive. Next one. Everything that you
thought I would be has fallen up. Linkin Park, Chester Bennington.
The song? Part right in front of
you. Shit, I don't know the names of this. Caught in the undertow, just caught in the undertow. Every step that I take is another. I don't know the name of the song.
Numb.
Numb, okay.
Numb by Linkin Park. You've still gotten every single artist so far.
Yeah.
I mean, I know these are big songs and big artists. I'm still very impressed. You should feel good about yourself.
I mean, this is like, I've been waiting for someone to play this game with me. This is like what I have all this potentially functional space in my brain.
Yeah.
This is and now I know that Chester Bennington is the lead singer of Linkin Park, you know?
We got 2 more for you, Alex.
Okay. Now 9 to 5. Whoa. Hit top speed, but I'm still moving most. Okay. It's Paul Stanley, Kiss.
Yeah. The song?
Detroit Rock City.
Detroit Rock City.
Wow, that
well
was a real
done.
Fucking guess. Just because he said 9 to 5, I was like, maybe it's about working in an auto plant.
Yeah, but it was.
Wow.
Wow. All right.
That was a lucky one.
One more for a near perfect run on Only the Voice. I know you didn't get Taylor Swift and Maroon 5 song titles.
Yeah.
I'm still considering it perfect because you got them.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
Then don't push back.
I'm not going to.
I'm calling you a perfect man.
I'm taking that credit.
Last one. You ready?
Yeah. Gonna fly lately. Yeah. Wait. I know it's Oasis.
Did you ever feel the pain?
Liam Gallagher.
That last one gave it away from not being Noel.
Yeah, well, I mean, their voices are similar. Yeah. I thought that could have been a trick question. And then
this isn't like, you know, this is a popular one. It's not like, you know, I couldn't pick like Champagne Supreme.
Right, right.
You and me a bit of
you said it.
It's called Forever?
Live Forever.
Live Forever. Okay.
Live Forever by Oasis.
Yeah.
Alex, you have won Only the Voice.
What do I get?
The deep admiration and like pride that I feel that you just killed that fucking game.
That's all I wanted.
So like, was it too, like, I was, when I made this, I was like, maybe this is too easy of a concept.
I don't know.
But like, I mean, you just did run the table basically, so maybe it was. Because the past games I've made have been a little more challenging.
Harder, yeah.
A little challenging for you. I still thought it was a fun concept and I wanted to do it.
I'd be interested to see if other people got the same, I don't know.
Well, let us know. If you played along at home, even though Alex was way, way quick on answering these things, let us know how you did at home listening. Well, that's only
that was fun.
I'm glad you had a
name
good time.
That tune.
Yeah,
but
only the voice style.
Yeah,
on tonight's musical guest today. Well, that's going to do it for us, Alex.
Yeah,
Our first ep in the bomb shelter, as we're calling it, the bomb shelter bunker.
Yeah,
Without producer Hank, though.
I know
our first ep without producer Hank.
Wonder what he's doing.
He's
now.
Doing great. He's probably in bed with my wife.
Yeah,
relaxing, getting ready for work tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we'll be back probably there next up.
Mm-hmm.
But what a nice little option to have.
Yeah.
To record
right?
here.
It's pull very, this lever if we need to.
Absolutely. And I think we did a great ep talking about a very good band.
No doubt.
That we're somewhat conflicted on, but mostly thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Mostly thumbs up.
Mostly thumbs up.
Well, you can follow us at TMGTpod on Instagram and Twitter.
Do it.
You can email us at TMGTpod@gmail.com. Rate, review, and subscribe. We haven't gotten someone rating in a while. I keep asking for anyone to rate us. I know there are people listening.
Yeah.
Just rate. I know it's
I listen to a ton of podcasts. I've never rated anything.
Neither have I. I know. Yeah. It's kind of an antiquated concept.
Yeah.
But it does help.
I think it matters.
It makes us feel good, like good little boys.
And that's why we're doing this, guys. Yeah, we need this.
I need to feel like a GLB.
Yeah.
We have to thank Kenny Reichel for our theme song,
mm-hmm.
as always. And Alex, did you almost just fall down? What was that? Did the chair almost collapse?
You know how sometimes when you lean back in a chair that has like a setting where it's not supposed to lean back and all of a sudden it leans back?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That you lean back.
So I really felt like I was about to fall over.
Yeah, I mean, my back's kind of hurting.
Yeah.
We have, you know, we've been kind of crouched over now for a couple hours. But we did it for you, the listener. We put ourselves through this kind of physical anguish for this unbelievable content.
And you can't even rate?
That you
can't even rate?
Rate. You can't even rate. I have horrible back pain. And you can't even rate. This is horrible
back pain that I could easily address.
This is why we hate our fans. This is why, you know, this is why I made fun of you guys at the top of the episode, but it's fine. Well, we'll be back in a couple weeks with a whole new band to discuss on this little podcast, and we'll see you then. Have a good one.
Peace.